start with salsa. They will then take the platform and social media leadership and make a presentation. And then we'll do that a follow-up. We hope that the space is going to be sufficient for members. Honorable Parks, President of SALSA, can we then invite you to make a presentation? If there are no apologies from any person, any apologies?
Apologies from Mr. Salisa and Mr. Murray.
Okay. Apologies are noted?
No.
Okay. Can we then invite the leadership of SALSA, the President, to make a presentation? And all of you colleagues are welcome. Feel at home.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Maybe first to introduce the delegation from SALSA. My name is Pak Sao, President of SALSA. Accompanying me is the Deputy President of SALSA, Mayor Gumede, members of the National Executive Committee, Mr. Stofil, and Member Poison, and the CEO of SALSA, CFO, and other members of the team. Our presentation will be done by the CEO of SALSA, but I thought it would be important to indicate that we thought it appropriate to present against the backdrop of the 20-year anniversary of the White Paper on Local Government and to evaluate the work that's been done in the sector and the challenges and, of course, the progress that has been made in the sector against the backdrop of the White Paper on Local Government and the critical issues that is generated as a result of such an evaluation. The presentation itself would also take into account the broad mandate not only of the South African Local Government Association, but the broad mandate of local government itself as part of the cooperative governance framework of the country. Maybe it might be important to also highlight, which would come out in the presentation itself, a number of critical events that we have undertaken to respond to some of the challenges confronting the sector, in particular with regards to the energy transition and the implications thereof to the sector and to our communities. SALSA convened an energy summit at which we engaged on the opportunities and challenges in the energy complex in the country and the reality of a sector that is evolving at a very fast pace. Noteworthy would also be the infrastructure financing summit, taking into account that we are cognizant of the needs of our communities and the importance of local government leveraging its balance sheet, broadly speaking, to find innovative financing solutions to enhance investment in infrastructure financing and meeting basic needs in our communities, ranging from bulk services to reticulation of municipal services and other services that are being provided by local government. These are noteworthy, Honorable Chairperson, because we ourselves are cognizant as the Association of Local Government of the need to enhance the tools and mechanisms available to local government to enhance its work. And out of these have come some specific recommendations that we are engaging government on so that we can have review of policy, legislation and instruments that can improve the way in which as local government we continue to serve our people. On that note, can I then hand over to our CEO, Mr. Tovile George, to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much,
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members of the committee. Our report, as outlined, will premise itself on the global commitments that local government in South Africa, like elsewhere, ought to contend with and find ways of giving local expression to those issues insofar as they relate to the mandate of local government. The second area that we will also focus on is the key national development plan imperatives, how they relate to local government, and how our annual reports attempts to reflect progress made around those areas. Part of setting the scene is the reflection on the 20 years of the white paper on local government, as the president of SALGA indicates. And many of the aspirational statements that were envisaged in the white paper, they had to be translated somehow into concrete legislative instruments, concrete resource allocation, and building of certain capabilities to local government to discharge its obligations. So our report will then reflect on what we think was the promise of the white paper and what is the current reality and how do we restore that promise. And that becomes the narrative of how we will reflect on this particular presentation. Essentially, Chairperson, there are very concrete objects that are outlined in the Constitution that give concrete expression of what are the basic expectations of what the system of local government must be. And essentially, it outlines those five key objects of local government. And institutionally, our municipalities had to be organized around those three firm categories to be able to discharge those objects. Secondly, on the white paper on local government, there are about four areas that are expected of giving concrete expression to developmental local government. A system that must work with citizens to find sustainable ways to meet socioeconomic development needs. And then local government had to focus on developmental outcomes, essentially dealing with infrastructure, creation of livable integrated communities, and also drive local economic development. And those roles were expressly defined for the three distinct categories of municipalities, metropolitan and districts and rural. Where the white paper, in our view, has located primarily the core transformative agenda, it envisaged that at metropolitan level, there is likely to be a greater need to drive the socio-economic equity imperatives, as well as dealing with issues of spatial and social justice. It also sought to locate the key focus on citywide spatial integration. Districts expected, as we all recall, to drive district-wide planning, at the same time to be able to provide direct support services to locals when there's no capacity. And rural municipalities had the potential to provide other focus areas. So looking down 20 years down the line, some of the key aspirations of building a caring system have experienced, in our view, a fair share of challenges, especially on looking at those key focus areas. Are we having a system that is caring? Have we managed to build an accountable system that is responsive, at the same time resilient? Our presentation would point out areas where we think some of those areas of resilience are now beginning to reflect heavy strains. We are also going to look at some of the key role expected of SALGA to play a much more focused role on human resource development, especially at managerial and counselor training, driving research, and also providing specialized services. These are areas where, in the main, the system was then premised on from the start. Many challenges, as we all know, great disparities and challenges, but in the main, to build a system that is much more viable. We then undertook an assessment report at the dawn of the 15th year anniversary, from 5 December 2000 to 5 December 2015. And essentially, our report indicated that, yes, we've established municipalities. We had to deal with bedding down the issues of powers and functions, established the organized local government system. But in the main, service delivery mechanisms, trends, and progress, there's huge achievements. Nevertheless, there are many challenges that are still clearly showing stubborn positions around those. The fiscal framework made certain policy assumptions which we think are now heavily tested. One of those was assumptions that the system must be able to finance itself in the main to raise above 90% own revenue to drive its recurring expenditure. And the issue of RSC levies had to be reviewed, and at the same time we had to institutionalize quite a lot. So those are areas that from the white paper assumption, we think there's many policy assumptions that required significant review. Came the National Development Plan that is embraced by all, and it carries, in our view, specific areas that local government needs to focus on. And so far, we think this area of building a capable state is one area that so far we have not strengthened the system of local government. So we need to invest more on those areas. Those we have highlighted, we think they are all relevant, but to a greater degree, some of them are more relevant relatively to others. We have also, as part of our global assessment, looked at framing our response, taking into account the key imperatives at a global level, the sustainable development goals, the management of local disaster in terms of the Sendai framework. The new urban agenda is one of those areas, and also the Addis Ababa on financing for development right up to the Paris Agreement on climate change. We have also looked at focus areas in Africa in terms of the 2063 goal, as well as the NDP issues I have highlighted that we have now compacted also at the level of the integrated urban development framework. Chairperson, having distilled all these areas, we are now looking at how the white paper imperatives, in our view, have been met substantially, or they are posing new challenges. We presented an APP to the committee for the 17-18, and we indicated that we will focus on the three goal areas. For first one, focusing on dealing with spatial transformation, reflecting on contradictions of space and how opportunities lost to be able to drive equity as required in the white paper, as well as redistributive imperatives. The second one is on driving good governance and building resilient institutions. And the third one, dealing with fiscal sustainability and fiscal equity. In terms of the first goal of driving inclusive economic growth, this is the promise of the white paper around those specific areas, that we need to drive special integration and socially inclusive development. We need to focus on ensuring that there is facilitated redistribution between developed and underdeveloped areas. Much as we have seen a lot of progress on the redistributive areas, our 15-year review also reflects stubborn challenges where the current reality is that we still have coexistence of abject poverty side by side with opulence. And this is where mostly it gives concrete expression of the lived realities of poverty coexisting with the wide-scale inequality in terms of opportunities for people who are staying outside our towns, and how we can deal with this fundamental question. It faces most of our towns, and most of the time, demarcation instruments, well-intended, they have not really, to a great degree, ensured that municipalities must be able to think creatively to close these gaps. So we need to build greater strategic capability at municipalities to be able to interpret space, deploy instruments to deal with these areas. So it remains one of the difficult tasks to achieve for municipalities. We have looked at areas where we think managing the urban-rural continuum, we need to implement specific measures focusing on the urban core in terms of major cities, but also focusing on small towns. We will start reflecting on the small town regeneration, which is an intervention SALGA is doing for many of the smaller towns. And in the main, we're focused on four provinces, looking at spatial development on a regional scale, working collaboratively with partners, COCTA, National Treasury, within the context of the broader IUDF. And these are some of the areas where we have started doing a detailed assessment, looking at special nodal developments to look at driving targeted intervention on small towns. We have 205 local municipalities, as we know, in the country, some of them relatively well off from a revenue base, but others significantly challenged. We have done research on regional economies and categorization. We have also tied up through consultation key indicators we think can be used to measure this. And our report on regional economic planning research for municipalities has been finalized for implementation. And on the area of looking at rural densification, we have managed during the year under review to develop a concept on rural densification. And we will now be looking at piloting this in one area in Mpumalanga Bushbuck Ridge, where we look at key principles that must form any intervention around promoting rural densification. The question of informal economy, we have also done some work to drive understanding and knowledge sharing in the sector on understanding informality. And this is part of our work that also will fit into the migration task team that we sit with major departments nationally and research institutions, but primarily to respond to recommendation 204 of the International Labour Organization that calls for formalization of informal economies. So we're surfacing research so that municipalities can be in a position to advocate better for policy instruments that must help us drive inclusive economic space. Around SPLUMA, which is another instrument that we are playing a role with other players in terms of our IGR, there's many areas where there is challenges around managing land and land use, and we now have SPLUMA. And in the main, most of our municipalities are raising these challenges of implementation of SPLUMA in terms of budgetary provisions, and also the challenges around clarifying the role of traditional authorities in regards to implementation of SPLUMA for those areas that are under tribal jurisdictions. The capacity constraints in many of our municipalities, the under-resourcing, some of them opting for municipal tribunals instead of looking at it from a district scale, it has brought its own challenges. And also there are municipalities who have recently been amalgamated in 2016. The majority of those municipalities are still facing challenges on how to set up these tribunals on an amalgamated scale. We have done assessment just in one province, just to illustrate the point. If you look at the Free State, in terms of implementation of SPLUMA and the functionalities of these structures, it is quite clear that in other areas they are functional in some of the municipalities, but there are certain areas where there is inconsistency in terms of meetings, areas for training to be provided, and we are playing that role to make sure that our municipalities are supported around these areas. That picture is also appearing in other provinces where it is much more acute, especially when there's contestation of the roads. So we think going forward we'll have to focus more on creating that enabling instrument so that we can improve competitiveness of our towns, the deployment of Spluma to drive spatial transformation. On the area of service delivery, again, we have looked at what is the intentions of the white paper around this area. And most of the reports that we have assessed through Stats SA non-financial census year in, year out, they show steady progress on the achievement of provision of infrastructure. However, also looking at AG on how municipalities are rated on managing asset formation, asset management, and implementation of projects, there's still huge capacity gaps on putting up projects, maintenance of infrastructure, reporting and completing projects. So the picture shows varying degrees of these areas. And where it shows on each of the infrastructure types, the picture is relatively uneven. On one area, it will show that it's doing very well. In other areas, the province may be doing not so well around that area. So there's a need for stronger interventions on setting up project management capabilities of municipalities, maintenance threshold for assets, and ensuring that project pipelines are managed in such a way that they can be multi-year rolling to avoid under-expenditure that gets reported. So there's a particular focus that we need to play around this area. On these slides, as we indicated, Chairperson, there's a lot of progress made, but we want to reflect what we think is under-targeting by ourselves as a sector. If you look at the areas where registered numbers of indigents across these core service baskets, we are still hovering less than 2.8 million people that are benefiting. So it either is a combination of municipalities under targeting, or at best, better targeting that results in people being exited properly out of the system that would have otherwise been benefiting irregularly on the system. But we still think that from a statistical significance, if you compare people who are declared indigent, who are less than poverty in terms of metrics used by Stats SA, many people are even beneficiaries of social grants. They will range between 16 million and 22. And how do we look at the measurement instruments that are used across the board so that it can improve our ability to target indigents? So it's a scope of work that we need to find ways so far to make sure that equitable share review is able to respond directly to people who are under severe strain of poverty. Benchmarking for municipal services and intervention we have done, looking at those instruments where AG raises challenges on managing, we have started working on the benchmarking to improve from our annual rating that we do as SALGA, working with the Research Commission. And now we're looking at measures during the year under review on including waste management and electricity services. And for the first year that we've implemented, we have now completed that, and we will be launching that during the course of the remaining months. And effective benchmarking, it helps us to make sure that municipalities can then improve on service efficiencies and also ensure that we have better planning around information sharing and also helping the municipalities. The area of environmental management, again, we are not reporting key strides made around this area. And this is why the white paper promised South Africans that municipalities must play a role around ensuring that environmental sustainability is included right across. There are concerns around that area. And what we have done as SALGA was to engage the Department of Environmental Affairs to make sure that legislative framework needs to be reviewed to specifically make provisions for budget as well as resources for performance of this function and it be measured. And we have at least developed a position and engaged the department on areas of funding and we would now be engaging FFC to make sure that these instruments can also be funded and environmentally performance managed. On the energy and electricity, it's one of the areas that is a major issues to flag. It is one of our core focus area, as SALGA we reported to the committee last year, that despite the clear policy intentions that the entire energy and electricity value chain needs to be overhauled and look at the entire value chain, these challenges still remain. And one of those is a major threat to municipalities not playing this role, and the degree to which it will affect asset bases of municipalities, including the impact it makes on credit ratings and borrowing abilities. The slide that we are showing, Chairperson, is a reflection of how the current landscape of electricity is in the country. If you look at people connected on the grid on this side, and then you look at who provides that service in terms of that connection, the red dots reflect where municipalities are providers of that. The bigger the dots, the more significant in terms of scale, either municipalities providing to 80% or whatever. But this green is ESCOM area. So you could see on this superimposed map that ESCOM provides significantly across the country, more than what municipalities are. But if you look at the fiscal model that is designed to base sustainability of local government, it rests on one of the core pillars, which is electricity. So when you don't have the instruments to provide that, significantly you are starting from a weak base on your core mandate to provide service delivery. Because the white paper provides significantly that electricity is one area that municipalities will be able to receive profits and be able to cross-subsidize other services that otherwise will be unaffordable. So any intention to take away that, it debases the entire engagement on municipalities. So we have amplified this conversation last year, we have amplified this this year, and one of those areas that is also emerging, Chairperson and the committee, is the area in the value chain dealing with the emergence of renewable energy, the generation element of the value chain, where the policy instruments so far are not clearly outlining what the role of local government is. And we think that there's a lot of opportunities that are lost on how municipalities need to play into that space, at the same time ensure we sufficiently insulate the revenue base of municipalities. We have escalated these matters at the highest level of the IGR. There is now an IMTT focusing on this area. We also presented at the PCC last year, 31 August, where matters came to the head in terms of municipalities saying, can we at least as a minimum resolve the certainty on the executive power? Who has power to provide electricity? And when that power is established, how do we manage relations between ESCOM? And an advisory panel was then set up by the Minister of Culture. And from where we stand, it has finalized its work, and that work is now a subject of engagement at the IMTT. So we are keenly awaiting the outcomes of that. We also reported to the committee some of the engagement directly we had with ESCOM on the area of key concessions that we thought from a systemic risk municipalities were facing this. And we reported that these are some of the potential impact if these are implemented consistently. Reviewing the dates of credit control from 50 days to 30 days and how it will help municipalities. Rationalization of the tariffs from the current level to 3 and how that will translate to municipalities. At the same time, also allow municipalities to pay connection charges over a certain period as opposed to upfront. We think if these are implemented consistently, they will go a long way in helping municipalities. And SALGA has been at the forefront of that. The notified maximum demand rules are currently under review, and the Department of Energy is currently working on public lighting, as well as the issue of the debt owed to municipalities. It's one of the core focus areas that we also want to highlight to the committee, that it continues to recover the municipalities in terms of their own sustainability and their own cash flow challenges and management. So there has to be much more robust assessment and evaluation of those abilities. And we would appreciate advice to the committee on how some of the innovations can be made around this area. We have identified issues of regulation for small-scale embedded generation and how this can be implemented. Regulations were then passed by the department, and we have since learned that they are being reviewed, and hopefully we'll wait for that engagement. The RP process has been reopened when we were making comments around that. SALGA also convened an energy summit, and on the energy summit raised quite a number of areas that we think the abandoning of the restructuring of redistribution has created the ongoing impasse and uncertainty on what we think is a very important issue of energy transition for the sector. And SALGA convened this conversation to look at how best to define a more sustainable structure and look at the reform work done to date. One of the key issues around this is the advocacy of SALGA that there must be an establishment of an energy reform commission by the President of the Republic to look at the current structure, evaluate form, and look at much more sustainable way and work with core partners around this area. We are also looking at the energy transition leadership structure that needs to work collaboratively to look at better ways around this area. On the housing front, again, we have made specific proposals on the accreditation, how to strengthen accreditation program to municipalities and streamline the funding flows in terms of implementing these programs. And we have engaged the department in terms of the proposals. There is now a revised accreditation framework by the department, and also made specific areas on the clarification of how assignment flows will work, as well as our position on the amendment on the bill that focuses on the PIA Act. On goal number two, good governance and resilient municipalities, again, we have looked at the expected role of municipalities around driving good governance, building leadership at municipalities, and how we must empower councillors to play their role in local government, ensure continuous learning to be able to promote local democracy. And at onboarding stage in 2016, this is the cohort of councillors we've inherited in the country as a baseline capability, where we have councillors reflecting that biographical data, those who have qualification above matric, those who at onboarding had less than matric, and those who have post-matric. So significantly, we are sitting at about 9% of councillors who have indicated that at least they have matric and post-matric qualification, almost 70% around that area. So there's a strong base to build from in terms of the councillors that we have in our profile. And what is our response as SALGA to that? Learning from the previous period of 2011-2016, we have now developed what we think is a macro learning pathway that must look comprehensively on how we must deal with the person from onboarding and develop that counselor, looking at three focus areas: the learning part, the reflecting part, key programs that we must have on reflection, and then the sharing part, so that we take a total development of a counselor right up until the counselor exits the system. And the SALGA Center for Leadership is focusing on this overall leadership. So our competency model, looking at areas to develop a counselor from self, how to lead, how to engage, setting direction in a municipality, key leadership capabilities we must build on that, how to engage stakeholders, and also areas of playing a role of oversight. So it's a 360-degree leadership competency assessment that we're focusing on. And these are some of the products that we have as part of that focus, focusing on management, echelon in municipalities, focusing on traditional leadership programs, focusing on councillor development, and also areas of building leadership of union in municipalities as an employer body, as well as special projects that we're focusing on. during the year under review chairperson, the integrated counselor program, these are counselors that have gone through a program and have been trained across the board in terms of the transition of 2016-2017. And the leadership on municipal governance of the second program, again, is a certification program that is focusing on areas of councillors to play their oversight. And so far, these are the numbers that have gone through this area. We have also focused on municipal leadership in terms of stakeholder engagement, as indicated earlier on. Again, these are a number of councillors across the board who have gone through this particular intervention, focusing on the ability to communicate, engage citizens. The local leadership seminars are also part of our engagement in terms of learning and reflection. And we have started a program on executive leadership in the universities. And the most recent one has been a graduation of 105 counselors at Best Business School that were the first cohort that we have taken for the year under review. And some of them have quite appreciated the training program, and others are actually going through some of the post-grad qualifications around this area. The Municipal Leadership Competence Assessment focuses on managers as part of the Municipal Systems Act on how we must conduct the assessment as part of decision-making of the recruitment agenda. And so far, we are facing huge demand beyond our own targeting, and we have taken almost 475 managers in 85 municipalities around this competency assessment. We have faced challenges though around this area, especially areas that we think needs to be reviewed around this matter. We have also done this competency across provinces, as you can see, for the numbers that we have outlined around this area. The SALGA Center for Leadership also focused on induction of managers in 2017 as well as 2017-2018. Areas around accredited performance management system as well as training of impact. Those are some of the core focus deliveries that we have had. We have also seen about 190 councillors and officials who have participated in an accredited ICM. So they will now be able to provide training across the country around this particular area. We are also focusing on key areas of transformation around dealing with issues of global programs, culture in cities, working with the international partners and universities, running sessions in some of our municipalities, and these are some of the partners that have been working with us, including delegates from municipalities. And here we are focusing on translation of culture imperatives in terms of how municipalities must transform space into centers that are more embracing. The areas of safety and security, again, translating the white paper imperatives on safety, training of councillors. These are some of the municipalities that SALGA has been able to take through in some of the specific focus areas of safety. The disaster issues are a major focus area, so our Sendai framework commits us to drive localization of disaster, and we've been able to take councillors through and managers in some of those three provinces, and it's rolling out in other provinces. On the area of human resource management, this is a major area. At the turn of 2017-2018, we have done an assessment at SALGA just between January 2017 to May 2018. In 4 months, huge transition in the sector and huge turnover of managers. And we had to undertake the assessment as indicated in terms of the regulations. And in the main, there are challenges on competency assessment for decision making in municipalities. We have escalated this issue. The upper limits of the remuneration of managers, it presents specific problems, where it is linked to areas of competency as a means of determining pay scale. We think there's room for review of regulation because as it is, it places people to use competency outcome to determine salaries of employees, not in the public service, not in other institutions, but in local governments. And in the main, competency assessment ought to be developmental support instruments on a basis, but not as a basis that if you score one, you're going to play, you pay, you left. If you score two, this and that. So we think there's room for reward of those, because as it does now, it undermines a lot of retention and succession, well intended as it is, but it has got this unintended trigger in terms of depression. The minimum qualification areas, again, we have raised the matter, the disciplinary codes, the role of MECs in terms of concurrence, and what the major risks that we are flagging to the committee, because we are picking up in four provinces challenges that relate to this issue. We have met with the Minister of COFTA to sensitize the department on what we think on the ground as major implementation challenges, and there's focus work that is being done to resolve this matter, and we remain optimistic that the matter will be resolved. We have also looked at the issue of compliance by municipalities on labor regulations, and we have done assessment in almost 81% of our municipalities, and we are continuing for the rest of them, and we have found compliance in many of those areas. Human resource maturity assessment is an instrument where we are looking at aspirations. If municipalities were to operate at an optimum level to manage human resource development, how do we measure this? And we have looked at about 43% of our municipalities that receive maturity levels that are zero, 33% operating at one test, at level one, and only 8% are in the almost ideal phase. So there's a lot of work that we need to do to drive municipalities out of the maturity. So the baseline assessment was to test where they are. And what does maturity assessment measure? If it's a level zero, it means the issues of documentation of processes, the key artifacts that must be in place, policies, procedures, and systems have to be in place and consistently applied. Level one talks about existence of some documentation, but we would like to see our municipalities operating at a much more integrative level. So there's a lot of work between now and 2021 where we must push municipalities to manage maturity level. And this is the picture across the country of how many municipalities are operating. You can see that very few operate at this level four. Very, very few. There are some in level three, but the majority are operating at the base level around it. And what is the measurement instrument? We are measuring the strategic management of HR, not whether there's a policy on recruitment. Are there systems? Is there technology? Is there consistent implementation? Are there standards that are there in place? And some of these have got weightings that enable us to be able to, through a scientific system, base where the municipality is. What is our response to this area where they are operating at a low level? We want to migrate municipalities. So these are municipalities, depending where they are on each, we will then deploy a differentiated strategy to respond to those areas. So far we've done the profiling, we're looking at the norms, and we'll be able to go through until municipalities are able to operate at the highest level in terms of these needs. We think it will go a long way in improving AG outcomes on those areas where municipalities are seen to be not adhering to internationally benchmarked human resource management system. We are also looking at measures of how we can drive shared service model in municipalities, looking at recruitment, sharing of recruitment, issues for managing specifically executive recruitment at municipalities, what some of the cost benefits that we can find, dealing with capacity of discipline and knowledge sharing. And these are areas that we are developing models around shared services on how we can overcome some of these limitations. On labor relations area, again, these are reflections that we have across the country. And in the main, we have huge challenges of unemployment, which is the current reality that when you contrast it with municipalities around ability to pay for services, the unemployment issue is a major challenge that is cited by many municipalities. We have at least provided support to municipalities on areas of representation right across the country. And Chairperson, we have again for 9 years in a row as SALGA achieved sustainability of labor relations, almost stability in terms of multi-year wage agreements that we have managed to secure. Recently we have signed an agreement for the next 3 years until 2021 with the sector. And we think it augurs well for sustainability in terms of stability. On good governance, again, there's many areas where there's weaknesses on oversight in municipalities. The Auditor General has raised this issue quite sharply, that significant weaknesses on supply chain management are quite huge in municipalities, issues of compliance with legislation. We also have weak oversight instruments and public participation, and also areas of governance stability, coalitions, how they pose new challenges on areas of governance, and how we must learn within the realm of legislation to support municipalities regardless of the model of governance. These are some of the areas that current reality poses on us. We have also looked at ways of how do we restore issues of stability, and some of the legislative instruments that were passed at the time made certain assumptions. We are now proposing certain areas to strengthen municipalities to drive issues of cost containment and also general laws amendments on these particular areas. These are some of the municipalities where we've provided direct support on governance and intergovernmental relations, running workshops in many municipalities on MPEC, 66 municipalities during the year under review. And these are provinces where we have been quite busy as SALGA on a support direct basis across those provinces. We have also looked at the area of municipal public accounts committees as oversight, and this picture reflects establishment around these structures, the functionality thereof and the non-functionality. Overall, our municipalities have functional impacts, but there are areas where in certain instances there's severe non-functionality in the Northwest, for instance, given the general challenges that are there, and in other municipalities where they have not yet established MPECs. But in the main, our view is that MPECs are in place, but Auditor General is able to come back and say, despite these structures, they are not picking up issues and driving strong oversight, and how do we tackle that limitation? So we have looked just at a comparison. How is COPPA in Parliament structured? And what instruments does COPPA have to be able to be insulated, to be able to directly intervene and drive issues? And in the main at municipalities, you look at establishment approach as opposed to key instruments to support. Some of them, when we workshop them, they indicate, yes, we do the report, we receive AG, but sometimes we're unable to take it right to its logical conclusion. So we need sufficient power to insulate us from many other vagaries that we can experience in the process of governance. So we need to find ways of ensuring that we find legislative or regulatory instruments to properly strengthen the role of MPECs at municipalities around this area. On the municipal support interventions, 139 instrument is one area that we thought we will also flag. Chairperson, we reported on it last year. National Treasury has done a study on how Section 139 has been implemented over the period. And this is what the issues of interventions are outlined in the white paper and the constitution, as well as the MFMA. And in the main, the research done indicates that since 2004, 87 municipalities have been placed under Section 139. Since 2004, year 2004, and very low success rate of 139 have been registered. And some of the challenges that are there are not linked to some interventions that are supposed to precede Section 139. And some instances findings reflecting inappropriate use of administrator model in terms of what is perceived as misinterpretation of executive obligation, there's weak oversight, and general failure to respond to these areas. Again, if you look at so far, there's about 11 municipalities that are under interventions, and SALGA has developed what we call a municipal support intervention framework to look at how best we can facilitate the other two spheres to play a role to strengthen this, to guide better national intervention and lay a concrete basis for the revocation of this area. We have run workshops in provinces, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest. Some of them have adopted this framework, and in the main it's about ensuring that we are able to guide the imperatives of MFMA interventions, the Section 154 obligations of national departments and provincial departments, and how, when 139 is implemented, needs to be managed in such a way that it becomes a justified instrument. There are major risks that we think the committee working with NCOP needs to play a greater role in monitoring these interventions so that we eliminate inconsistencies and make sure that they are also not fragmented around this area. So there's huge work to be done on refining the approach to Section 139. District municipalities, again, as key focus areas, there are certain functions that are known. In the main, the 20-year review indicates that there's justification for district model of government to be reviewed, so that it's not anchored only on the reliance on the instrument of funding. We look at other ways of innovatively remodeling district municipalities. So we'll be able to work closely, as COCTA is leading that work with MDB and SALGA and FFC to look at how best we can manage the key risks that district municipalities have seen themselves going through a transition of funding instruments where currently they are sitting with equitable share and conditional grants as a core basis of funding for them. So under scoring the base of 44 districts that are supposedly to provide guidance and support to 205 local municipalities. So all those 44 action zones of governance are vulnerable in terms of the model as well as the instrument. So there's a strong case for districts to be remodeled to strengthen their ability. On areas of greater fiscal equity and financial sustainability, again, we go back to the promise, what kind of system we must have on municipal finance and how it must address these areas, including areas of enabling municipalities to gear private investment and also budgeting and maximizing local revenue instruments. And these were the principles largely that were outlined, and we believe some of these instruments have not been maximized so far in the current fiscal instruments. There's room for further review around these areas, and one of those is that SALGA is calling for the review of equitable share to be able to accommodate some of the imperatives that the National Development Plan brings to local government and some of the key challenges where we face a dwindling resource base in municipalities. One of the key area, Chairperson, that we think merits reviewal, the white paper made a policy assumption that municipalities must be able to raise 90% of own revenue at that time, and it identified instruments to do this. So the question to be asked, are our municipalities able to raise this in the current macroeconomic context, in the levels of poverty and underdevelopment we have? And what instruments are we giving them to maximize those as envisaged in the white paper? So we think there's strong room for us to refine both vertically and horizontally the instruments of equitable share to look at better targeting and maximizing efficiencies. Some of our municipalities face significant vulnerabilities around performing some of their function, and one of those is better amplified by the current debt profile faced by municipalities. We currently have 143 billion rand owed as at June 2018. That's the money that is owed to municipalities. Last year we reported to the committee it was 128 billion. In 2016 we came to the committee, it was 116 billion. In 2015 we came to the committee, it was 108 billion. It grows without new debtors getting connected to the system. So it's interest on interest, and how do we find sustainable ways of restructuring this? So in the face of that, we've got these municipalities that are unable to pay ESCOM, the top 10 local debtors sitting at 10.3 billion rand around this area. And some of these debt, as shown in the balance sheet, they've got a negative impact on their balance sheet, and it also affects credit rating and borrowing ability. So we need to find a way of dealing with these areas to make sure that we can find a way of confronting this. Some of the provinces where we have cited highest bonds, they also face severe levels of unemployment. those provinces where they've made that challenge. So we're not saying there's a perfect match between unemployment and inability to pay. That's not the narrative. The narrative is that there's macro factors that are weighing significantly on weakening the ability of municipalities to play their debt, apart from general poor management. But there's macro factors that need to be factored into the equation. If you look at poverty index measured by States SA, the majority of these municipalities where they are significant debtors, you look at Eastern Cape, you look at Northern Cape, you look at Limpopo sitting at 82% and KZN. And these are the years that are most recent from looking at these from State SA poverty trends released last year. So you could easily see a correlation between provinces where poverty remains high, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal, and you look at ability of municipalities to collect, there is a perfect storm in terms of how these municipalities are really struggling to be able to manage their finances best. We also have looked at Section 71 report, which may have been presented, apart from an aggregate picture that shows that our municipalities have spent 82% of capital expenditure. They have been able to collect revenue. They are also reporting positive that our municipalities, in terms of employee costs, their operating expenditure below 30%, which is a national treasury norm. There may be others above that, but the overall aggregate is still less than the trend. But in the main, there's a huge issue of cash position of municipalities. 40 of our municipalities have negative cash position as at June. And creditors longer than 90 days are growing in almost four provinces. So in the main, Chairperson, we are flagging this picture in terms of a severe strain that most of our municipalities, we've got 123 municipalities that are collecting less than 80%, which on its own is a significant major challenge. And 59 of those are collecting less than 50% of revenue. So budgets are not balancing, and they are unlikely to balance unless fundamental overhaul of restructuring those budgets so that they are more realistic. But it may also call for complementary instrument from the fiscal to deal with the reality that is there. So we're flagging the issue that it's a major area that requires collective reflection. The municipal debt, we have profiled it. We look at historical debt. We brought a proposal in terms of saying we want to lobby Parliament to look at innovative ways of dealing with the issues of restructuring the debt owed to municipalities. And one of those areas is that we want to look at an advisory panel to look at complementing public works that works with Treasury to restructure the debt of municipalities. But we are also saying the debt is escalating, Chairperson. Water boards owed those huge amounts of money. And many of those municipalities are unable to enter into a realistic repayment target. In the main, there's a huge factor of historical debt. And we are suggesting that possible one instrument that can be used is looking at a possibility, amongst others, whether historical debt should not be looked at for purposes of extinguishing in an innovative way. One of the areas that from the protection of revenue, we will be coming back to commit to indicate, we have set up a task team with SARS, and we brought to SARS that much as SARS itself is protected from a tax certificate clearance, anyone who wants to trade with any municipalities is bound by law to obtain that clearance. So SARS revenue stream is directly pre-protected, but there's no similar obligation for municipalities. So I can be a business person sitting in Cape Town, I'm under no obligation to produce rates and service clearance as a basis to be able to do that. So we think there's room for us to look at revenue laws as well as SARS laws to make sure that we can expressly provide for some of these instruments. The second area that we think needs to be looked at, and it's not sufficiently canvassed across the sector, we're just flagging it as an idea. If I owe SARS, if I declare my income tax, it's either I'm due or there's outstanding by me. So due to me, maybe 29,000 from SARS, and I'm happy on that. But I'm owing the city of Cape Town 28,000 rand. There's no corresponding obligation to from any of us as state institution to say, but you are owing the same state. So how do we give you this money if you're owing? So what legal instruments we can consider protecting revenues municipal, so at least a municipality can have a first right of indication to SARS that nobody owes me. And it's an area that may have to be robustly looked at. It's just an idea that we're depositing, that we need to tighten this element such that it's not easy for anyone to escape the service obligations that are outlined. On the audit outcomes, these are the pictures, but in the main, we are saying we want to look at accountability in a much more deeper form. It's one thing to continue to paint the picture that there's adverse, there's this and this, but managers appointed, they do not take accountability. And what instruments are there that we can strengthen the robustness around that? We are thinking as part of the proposal in SALGA to look at whether we should not escalate accountability. I'm a registered CFO by my own SAICA and whatever. I'm an MM. How would we make sure that we can introduce something like a merit-based system, a demerit and merit-based system? So I can't be a CFO in Cape Town, badly manage finances, but I imagine a tech-wing, and there's no reflection about my inability to manage things in Cape Town. So if you have a demerit system, we can annually say with all factors, how do we look at legislation to sufficiently empower people to objectively give them instruments, but sanction them appropriately when they're not doing that. And one of those areas could be a graduated instrument so that we can look at measures as your final ability to whether you must be renewed contract, there must be intervention, or at worst case scenario, debarred from the government. Quite controversial approaches, but to the extent that they can be looked into the basket of being robust on accountability, we think there should be room for considering such a proposal in a measured way. On the area of challenges facing municipalities, again, these are direct support we have provided in many municipalities on annual financial statements on areas. 43 or 4 municipalities were in the red zone, and SALGA has assisted in some of these areas. One of the main problems that remains to us is MSCOA in terms of the degree to which we think it contributes to some of the regressions because of inability of municipalities to play that role. We have provided support to these municipalities during the year under review, and some of them, out of the 43 that we have supported, some of them have progressed out of the red zone to better audit outcomes. And with our limited capacity, we are able to focus, and we also do programs around broad-based support on areas of internal audit. We are also looking at instrument to build on what the white paper says. How do we creatively strengthen the revenue raising as well as raising finances either from a debt capital market or looking at domestic areas of instruments like crowd pooling? So SALGA convened a conference of innovative municipal finance to look at ways to look at these areas to access funding for municipalities and ensure better offerings for municipalities. And we are looking at key outcomes of that in terms of looking at bridging information gap between financiers, setting up a facilitated support to municipalities, and also working with Treasury to look at urban finance areas around this area. We are also looking at areas of international municipal cooperation and domestic cooperation as part of our core mandate in the white paper, strategic profiling. And we are working collaboratively with our international partners on the issues of the new urban agenda. As we have indicated, SALGA has worked with the UN Habitat and the Human Settlement to look at the guidance on the tools for managing urbanization. And we launched this book in Malaysia last year, and it's available to committee members to look at how we can empower municipalities to lead change on urban and spatial transformation. We are also looking at partnerships to implement our programs, and drawing from the white paper, areas where our municipalities are required to play inter-municipal cooperation, also engage with other countries in terms of municipal partnership, in a whole range of partnership, but also to make sure that we profile local government internationally. And these are some of the benefits of our international work as SALGA, building on our reputation in Africa and also in SADC, and also playing a role of leading the world body of cities, of which the president of SALGA is the global president. We are able to leverage resources in terms of our key partners, and so far during the year under review, we leverage almost close to 80 million rand of programs that are aimed at supporting municipalities on these areas of governance, areas partnership with UN Women, partnership with Commonwealth Local Government on LED, partnership with Federation of Canadian Municipalities, our sister organization, on building inclusive green municipalities. And these are municipalities in the provinces where they are direct beneficiaries. We are also looking at partnership with the European Union, and these are municipalities that are participating on strengthening governance and capacity of municipalities across the country that SALGA is implementing. We are also looking at a program around capacity for development, a 36-month program around areas of standardization framework for areas of community development, as well as the areas of developing mobile apps to assist municipalities on data management, data analysis, and so on. These are some of the other partners we work with in terms of areas of knowledge management, knowledge exchange, but in the main, partnering municipalities with other global partners. I will not over-exhaust all of these. There are quite many chapters in terms of our international partnership. So I will now jump to knowledge management. What are we doing on the knowledge management? We have issues around the councillor vulnerabilities last year, which we shared with the committee at the APP, and part of that work has resulted into the establishment also in KZN that we have engaged with the commission that recently released this report, the Moran Commission, on some of what we think are drivers of vulnerability of councillors. The impact of mining in municipalities in Gauteng, we have engaged municipalities, and we are also convening universities in March, April this year, to look at all 23 universities in Africa to help us drive the evidence-based leadership training on key issues that we think are relevant for them to help us drive local government. The last slides, Chair, are on our own internal governance and our own internal administration, and so far how we are driving engagement of SALGA on the core mandate of representation. And we have been quite prominent during the year under review in portfolio committees, at the NCOP, both debates and select committees, and also our presence generally during the National Assembly debates as part of our core mandate. We have also, in terms of our own accountability on budget management, quite received acknowledgement and recognition by the Auditor General on how we manage our finances and how we account in terms of our international finance reporting standards as the organization. On our own sustainability financially, we face quite a lot of challenges as the organization in terms of being reliant on membership levies. Yet on the basis of how we service members, we are unable to distinguish in a much more pointed way how we treat vulnerability. So the executive committee of SALGA then said we must make sure that we are able to categorize municipalities to provide targeted support but also protect revenue streams of municipalities. So in terms of financial sustainability for the year, these are areas where we are showing significantly that we have been able to manage our assets and also manage the liquidity of the organization quite favorable. And also some of the key instruments of our ratios, solvency, the organization is solvent. Our revenue management is also fairly positive. And the payment levels of membership is also strong, yet vulnerable in terms of how municipalities. The last point, Chairperson, which we thought the committee would live with, is that there are major risks facing local government. The energy dynamics are one of those areas. So there has to be collaborative effort to define exactly how the energy transition should define in concrete terms the role of local government, given that it has got a greater scope of impacting on the very sustainability core of the mandate of local government. The municipal debt is a major issue that is escalating. It's currently sitting at $143 billion. The Section 71 report of Treasury says only 28 billion rand of this 143 is realistically collectible. But the policy does not go further and say, what do you do with the area that is not realistically collectible? What does it do to balance municipalities? What are the measures to protect and deal with the separation of those who can afford but don't want to pay? Those who can genuinely not afford to pay, how do we clear those areas? So there's a need for a collaborative effort. Section 139, again, is a major issue. We think there's need for maximum vigilance so that all other players are held accountable to play their role to provide support when it is necessary, and then streamline the intervention. Financial vulnerability is one area where most of our municipalities are facing cash flow and liquidity problems. Equitable share, we are making proposals to the budget forum on how to review equitable share, and it's meriting on the basis of how we are seeing district municipalities as other locals around this area. The funding for districts is a major area. Amalgamated municipalities are still facing significant challenges, and there's a need for a much more streamlined conversation on how to smooth the implementation of SPLUMA by municipalities. We recommend that the committee should note the progress of SALGA's contribution in the journey of transforming local government. Also, the committee to reflect on the key major risks facing local government and propose remedial actions to be undertaken at the level of the executive as well as other bodies. That's our submission, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you very much, George, for the presentation. Unless there's another point that the leadership of SALGA want to add on. If not, then we'll engage with your report, and then so the leadership will come from time to time if there are issues that need all of us to engage on. Again, thank you very much for this. And then, again, congratulations, and I think we have been receiving a clean audit opinion every day, every 7 years now. I'm right, 7 years?
Nice.
You know, it seems money is managing the money very well. Let us take the colleagues who want to pose questions and engage on great discussion. I've noted Honorable Mthethwa, Honorable Maluleka, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Melha. Okay. We'll allow Honorable Masondo.
No, thanks, Chair. I've got only two issues. The first one, Chair, is around the issue of the debt that is increasing almost on a yearly basis. What plan do you have, SALGA, around this? Or what is a specific proposal that you may want to raise to us? So that we can look at it, maybe as a joint committee with other committee members, to bring come together and address this matter. Because again, I've got no doubt in my mind that if come next year as well, this matter will be escalated to billions of rand, up to 76, if I'm not safe, from 60 to 70, looking at it. And what informs this really? Is this the interest on the really actual amount, or what is it, George? That's the first one, Chair, that I want to understand from George. The others, Chair, is the issue of the electricity. I've noticed that here, Chair, the issue of electricity is still a problem. That Eskom is, looking at the map that we have displayed on the screen there, Eskom has still been providing electricity in almost 90% in the entire country. While you also expected to get the electricity, to buy electricity in bulk and sell it to subsidize other services. How is this thing happening? Are there any discussion that you are having with the Department of Energy around this matter? And if there are, what are the problems? What are the key problems that that makes Eskom not want to pull out of this area, at least to focus in one area? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me also welcome the presentation by SALGA. It was a detailed report. And how I wish that municipalities would implement the initiatives that we have been talking about here and wouldn't be sitting here having dysfunctional municipalities out there. Chairperson, let me just come back to the SALGA itself on its annual report. Yes, you got a clean audit. But then there are some issues that I want you to explain to us. Your under expenditure. How did you incur that under expenditure of 8.2 million? And also the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 14,000 and the irregular expenditure of that 1 million. Can you explain to us on that one? And also, can you explain why so much increase on your audit fee? In 2016-17, it was 2.5 million, but for 2017-18, it stands at 4.1 million. Why so much increase? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Ma'am.
Wait for the question.
Assist there to press.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to join the committee in thanking the presentation from SALGA. And I think, to me, it's a well-presented report that we have received. And yesterday, we also received the AG's report. I just want to find out, maybe the information will be covered in one of your, in your annual report that we have received. The issue in terms of the, for example, the issues of wasteful expenditure in the area of the community work programs by the municipalities, by the different municipalities, and how that problem can be resolved, because that was one area of concern as the committee, that it seems the area of, we believe this is one vehicle that is assisting in terms of the job creation and so on, but it looks like there is a lot that is not going okay in that particular space. So I'm not sure if then that you would have that information, because it's not covered in terms of the presentation that you have just given to us, although it was a really broad presentation. The second one is that maybe just to get a feel how the performance of the different municipalities, you did highlight them in terms of the smaller municipalities that are suffering, and in terms of the collection of monies that's supposed to be collected. But if you go deeper in terms of those municipalities, what are the types of challenges apart from the issues of water and electricity? Are there any other challenges? And there's also one a big challenge of the business people that are acting the way that is really unacceptable, of forcing themselves to be employed when they are not supposed to be getting those type of work. For example, I will make an example of the area I know where there is people who call themselves Stella Ngokubona, and we read on the papers on almost on a daily basis, these are the bad things that are happening. Are we really in a threat that we are going to not be able to govern the municipalities because they will come and direct us as the officials in those local municipalities? What is the mechanism of resolving that matter? Because really, some of these people should have been behind bars right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. First of all, again, congratulations to CELG on another clean audit. Just talking about the audit for a second before I go into the presentation, there was a concern raised by the Auditor General about your supply chain management processes, and specifically with relation to competitive bidding not being complied with. What steps are you taking to address that? Then, Chair, if I can turn to the presentation, I've got several questions, if I may. The first one is on slide 34, where you talk about regional electricity distributors. Now, this was a project that ran from the late 1990s until 2010, and then it was shelved by, amongst others, National Treasury and the Cabinet, because there was no buy-in between CELGA on the one hand and the municipalities represented by CELGA and ESCOM on the other hand. And I know that there was a long way down the line with regard to Red 1, which was based around Cape Town, but that there were disagreements over how it would be implemented, who would give up what, etc., etc. You're now pushing for it again. Does that mean that CELGA is willing to compromise? Does that mean that there are discussions around this? What is the exact status of this proposal? I mean, why are we resurrecting something that was put to bed 10 years ago after 15 years of debate and discussion? My next question relates to the appointment of senior managers on slide 65. I just want to know how many have been appointed. You indicate that 474 vacancies were advertised. Of those 474, how many were appointed? On the next slide, you talk about the competency of senior managers and the link between upper limits of remuneration to competency. And you say that should be done away with because it undermines retention and succession efforts. But one thing that concerns me is that we have indicated time and again that the minimum competencies of senior managers are not being complied with by municipalities. And we've had to have extension after extension after extension for those minimum competencies. My point is this. By doing away with competencies, a competency link to remuneration, we are promoting mediocrity. And as you know, South Africa's municipalities are in a dire strait. Now, it's all very well to say CELGA is doing well as an organization, but the municipalities themselves are in a shocking situation. I don't care which municipality you point to. They are in a shocking, shocking situation. So by doing away with competency and saying, well, there are other criteria that need to be factored in, we're saying, you know what? It doesn't matter if you're good. It doesn't matter if you have the skills or the experience or the qualifications. That's not important. Other things are more important. Maybe it's who you politically align to, for argument's sake, or how long you've been doing the job. But just because you've been doing the job for 20 years doesn't mean you're good at doing the job. Chair, then on the Section 71 analysis, it's slide 97 and 98. I am concerned that there are significant gaps on the Section 71 analysis, and yet CELGA doesn't seem to be aware of these gaps and has proposed nothing to remedy those gaps. Let me give you an example. The reporting of investment by municipalities, in other words, where they are depositing their money, is not adequately addressed in the Section 71 reports. And we've seen that in the whole BBS saga. We've seen that municipalities are getting away with putting money into banks that are not legally compliant with the MFMA and the investment regulations of Treasury. Treasury tells them that. And the municipalities come back and say, no, our own bylaws say that we can do it. Now, frankly, SELGA should be taking a much firmer position on this. Because, honestly, municipal finances are the single biggest stumbling block to good governance in municipalities. And frankly, if we come back to the whole picture of SELGA and its priorities, and Councillor Tao and I and Mr. George and I have had several discussions about the priorities of SELGA, it bothers me that the amount that is being put into good governance and the amount that is being put into financial, your program around good governance and your program around financial stability of municipalities, or I'm not sure what the exact title is of that, but that I think it's program 3, your financial program for municipalities, is only 49 million rand. You're putting much more into partnerships, and frankly, even here today, you've spoken much more about international trends and the impact of the global market. You know what? Our problem isn't international. Our problem is on the ground in our municipalities. What are we doing to capacitate them to deliver the services that they are supposed to be doing? I realize it's nice to bring in outside organizations and get them to help us, but we need to have sustainable financial models and financial structures in order to make it happen. You identified, Mr. George, MS SCOA as a significant risk to audits. And I agree it is. What are we doing to capacitate municipalities to implement MS SCOA? Because MS SCOA gives us a standardized chart of accounts for all municipalities. It means that we can go and see a small local municipality and a metro municipality and compare their charts of accounts and say, this one's doing well, this one's not doing well because of this and this and this, and they look the same. Right now we can't do that. So we've got to get that implemented. But we need to support them in rolling that out and helping them ensure that MS SCOA is properly implemented. Just with regard to your idea on SARS, that's slide 102, and where you link the SARS tax return to the amount that's owed to municipalities, I think it's a brilliant idea. I really do. But I think it's unrealistic. Because, let's be honest, municipal billing systems are in a disastrous state. And the fact of the matter is that they would have to link the municipal billing system to the SARS system somehow and see whether there's an amount outstanding to the municipality. So I think it's a great idea. I just don't think it's feasible. I agree with the idea of the merit system for municipal managers and CFOs. I think that's another inspired idea. Got two more comments, Chair. On knowledge sharing, I think that SELGA sits on a lot of information. But the key word there is sits on. You know, if you go onto the SELGA website, it's very, very difficult to find information. Your search function doesn't really work. Your different categories, your knowledge hub and your circulars and the like, are not linked to each other. So something gets deposited in circulars one day, in documents the next day, and in the knowledge hub, but it's the same document, consecutive documents, but applying to the same thing, and gets deposited in different places. My point is that I don't think that your knowledge management is where it should be as an organization, and I think that you need to do a lot of work on accessibility to information. I think you need to relook your website. I think you need to relook your search functionality within your website. And then the very last one, Chair, relates to slide 132, which was the major risks facing local government. First of all, your comments around Section 139 interventions and Section 154. I'm afraid I frankly disagree with you, because by the time you get to Section 139 of the Constitution. It's very clear when a Section 139 intervention is required, when there is a serious breach of financial obligations. Now, prior to that, yes, there should have been Section 154. And I think it could be argued that there is Section 154 support and capacity. Because Section 154 is not an intervention. Section 154 is an ongoing support and capacitation of municipalities. But Section 139 says, when it has broken down, now we must intervene. And I'd be very interested, Mr. George, in seeing those two documents that you referred to, the study by National Treasury and your support and interventions framework. I think that I'd like to read them and provide some input on that. My last comment, Chair, relates to the amalgamation of municipalities. Now, Selva was all in favour of amalgamating municipalities in 2016. Would you agree now, in hindsight, that wasn't a good idea, that it's actually dragged the majority of those municipalities backwards? In fact, I just want to highlight something with regard to your intervention on audit outcomes. You intervened or you assisted in, how many municipalities was it? 43 municipalities. Okay. Maybe the question should be, how many didn't improve? How many are still struggling? How many have regressed, gotten worse? My point is this, that are you seeing that your assistance, intervention, support is making a significant difference in those municipalities? Because if only 7 out of 43 municipalities improved, then we've got a problem. Then the return on investment is not there. Chair, I'm going to leave it there. I think I've asked enough questions and comments. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to start off by saying that I think all of us should congratulate Selga for a quality report, and congratulate you, as has already been indicated, on achieving the clean audit. Of course, there's room for improvement, as always. But to raise the following points very briefly. The first one is on the regeneration of small towns. Now, this is a government-wide program. I think we need to interrogate this slightly differently all the time. And maybe you should provide a bit more information on the pilot project, if there are any. Secondly, just to say that one of the issues that the President raised when he spoke to traditional leaders at the beginning of the year was this whole notion of the agrarian revolution. The chairperson of the committee will remember this. Now, if this is a rural type idea in terms of intervention, particularly in rural areas, we need to pose the question: how many of these towns are affected? Because this was raised by the President, it was not raised by Selga. But Selga, given the fact that he's an important player, I think it's a matter that we may need to follow up and follow through. The second point, Chairperson, is in relation to the book produced by Selga. So the question is, is this book available in the market and so on? Can it be made available to those of us who serve in committees such as this? The third point is major on major risks. Now this is raised in slide 66. Now what I accept the major risk as characterized in the report. But I think that we need to zoom in and elaborate a bit on the failure of the unemployed to pay for services. Because I think that this is a major point. It can be raised a bit more clearer than is the case. I know that in slide 47, the households are responsible for 71.2% of what is owed to municipalities. Clearly, this is a very, very important point, but unless there's innovation and creativity on the part of SALGA to begin to say, this is how this issue ought to be sorted out in the longer term, no one will raise it. SALGA is too important a role player to refocus the attention of everyone on a matter so important. Then there's the issue of Spluma related challenges. Although there's a slide here that deals with a bit of detail, but I would like personally just to be assured that on what the issues are, that's a reminder on what the issues are around Spluma. I think that would be useful. My last point, Chairperson, relates to the question of leadership. I know that SALGA has started a program, and I think that SALGA is assisting municipalities to move in the right kind of direction. But it would be very useful just to have a comment or two on how far is this program? Are there visible and notable results? I think that will assist us to clarify my own mind on where are we exactly. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start off by apologizing, Chair, because there was a chief's forum in the morning at the state of there. And, buddy, am I? Chief of Forum.
Are you a we?
I'm a chief whip. Chairperson, I've just a few things to bring to the fore. Let me start off by congratulating SALGA leadership, CEO, for a comprehensive report, and also on you getting the clean audit. You are congratulated. And having said that, Chairperson, I think what is of prime importance to all of us is to see well-functioning municipality in order for them to address the issues of service delivery. And SALGA comes in then to ensure that it assists in that regard, facilitate programs that will assist municipalities to ensure that they change the entire service delivery trajectory of our municipalities. And you recall, Chairperson, from the beginning when the minister took over and he had a media briefing and he identified the whole host of municipalities that are malfunctioning. And as we see today, there have been adverts, and I'm sure some people have been appointed to ensure that they bring some scarce skills to our municipalities. So I just wanted to find out what tangible assistance that SALGA is bringing in to ensure that we have these so-called well-functioning municipalities? Because it pains all of us, Chairperson, just across the board, when we have municipalities that are not functioning well, because that has a detrimental effect on the economy of the country, and where service delivery is somehow paralyzed, we all get affected. So, in line with the program that the minister has piloted to ensure that those municipalities, about 70% of them, that are malfunctioning, what is it that SALGA is doing to ensure that you also come to the table in a tangible way? And I agree with the colleagues here who are saying, more than focusing, I don't mean to undermine the international interventions, more than focusing on those, but I think the local ones are more important. I would hate to see a municipality that has been not functioning well for some years, whether it's in the Northwest, Northern Province, or KwaZulu-Natal. We want all of them to function well so that they service our people. Now, I would like to know whether your interventions and your partnership with municipality is reaping some dividends to ensure that these municipalities begin to come up with a turnaround sort of strategy, so to say, now they are functioning well. So the second one, Chairperson, is on amalgamated municipalities. What are the challenges that you see with them that seem to be, so to say, Mr. George, perennial with these amalgamated municipalities? Because some of the municipalities that were brought together came with different accounts. There were those that were sort of functioning fairly well, and those that had no revenue at all. Yet, in line with the demarcation, they had to be together. Do you see any improvement? What is it that is happening? What are the challenges? And how can we assist? I know we are bringing in a plethora of issues, but at the end of the day, as a country, as a citizen of this country, I want to see us, all of us, contributing to say municipalities are functioning well, because they are at the coalface of service delivery. Once we have the local government functioning well, at least half of our problem is solved. And those are the issues, Chairperson, I want to bring to the table. And then another issue, which is the last one, is the issue of water, which is a problem. You know that the question of water is usually a question of a district municipality working with the water board, say Ngeni or Mhlathuza Water Board, and yet the local municipalities are the ones who are suffering. But what is it that you are doing in that regard? Because seated here, we have municipalities, especially in the rural areas, who have no water at all. Nothing. I know that you cannot provide water yourselves, but through your interventions, you can facilitate that to ensure that we have water, because it's really a huge challenge in our community. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Can we allow SALGA to answer? We'll come to the second round. I think we have given them sufficient questions. Can I give anyone there from SALGA can answer any
questions? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I'll just deal with some of the issues, and my colleagues will join in commenting on the issues. The first relates to the work that we're doing with regards to electricity. SALGA is participating in the Interministerial Task Team on Electricity. And in the Interministerial Task Team, there was a process that appointed an advisory team that has generated a report that has looked at all the challenges with regards to electricity distribution, including matters of mandate, responsibility, and so on. The report of the Interministerial Task Team has been circulated to members of the task team. We will be at a meeting of the Interministerial Task Team on Friday this week, but I should say that it has already also started in the cabinet process that relates to matters related to electricity. And that has to do with a number of issues. The first has to do with what we consider as a matter of the constitutional mandate and responsibility of local government as the primary distributor of electricity, and the way in which we've designed as a country our local government system to enable electricity to cross-subsidize other services. And there are many municipalities where that is not a resource or revenue stream of local government, and there's been a debate as to how that is being resolved. And some of those issues have been canvassed in the Interministerial Task Team so that there is a comprehensive response as to what needs to be done about the structure of the electricity distribution industry and the responsibility of local government. And the debate has been very important to the extent that we have said that whilst we recognize that this is a constitutional duty of local government, we also accept that the distribution industry is functioning in such a manner that involves both local government and ESCOM as a distributor. And therefore, it is not always about literally taking over, but it is also about the possibility of entering into service level agreements and so on with ESCOM so that we're able to resolve the issue about revenue for local government. We are hoping that the results of the Interministerial Task Team will help us resolve that and would identify areas of legislation and policy that requires intervention. But there are also some of the structural and systemic issues in the electricity industry that require some attention. So, for example, the interest rate regime that we made reference to, and whilst we've acknowledged in the presentation some of the concessions that we've received from on behalf of our members, with regard to, let's say, the interest regime. We think an interest regime that says prime plus five in an environment where we're dealing with local government is onerous on the municipalities themselves and places huge pressure on local government. So we have received a concession that says we'll reduce it from prime plus five to prime plus 2.5%. But we do think that that interest rate regime is onerous on local government. The second is about the credit control regime that requires attention. So we have a credit control regime that says that after 15 days when a municipality has not paid, there would be penalties. But if you read the MSA, the cycle is 30 days. So particularly in municipalities that do not have the reserves to be able to mitigate the 15-day gap in the cycle, it means that after 15 days you already generate interest. And that interest has a penalty of prime plus 5 or prime plus 2.5%, and the interest is compounded. So the situation just gets worse and worse, and we think that we need a resolution of that. And the Interministerial Task Team has canvassed that, and we're engaging through the Interministerial Task Team on that matter, including the matter of notified maximum demand, where notified maximum demand is a regime that says that a municipality shall receive a particular amount of electricity, and if they exceed the notified maximum demand in terms of what is consumed, and they exceed it in 1 month, the penalty will be charged for 12 months. And we think that that is extremely onerous, the pressure that's put on local government. So we think that we need to revise the notified maximum demand regime. So that's some of the work that we're doing in the interministerial task, both in terms of resolving some of the issues that are structural and systemic, whilst also resolving structural issues about how the electricity industry should be structured. Our view, coming back to the point about the regional electricity distributors, is that we have said that we think that in the work that was done around the rates, there's valuable information that could be extracted to ensure that electricity is distributed optimally, and that we look at the economic models that we engage. The issue that was at the core of our argument at the time was about the ownership. Because if the ownership was to transfer the electricity distribution industry into national government, you're taking away a significant portion of revenue from local government. And if that happens, we will continue complaining about local government not having the capacity or resources to undertake its responsibility. So we think that there is value in some of the information that came out of the red process, but that there are matters of ownership and structure that need to be debated. And it is a matter that we've canvassed in our own energy summit, but also a matter that's been canvassed in the interministerial task team. As indicated in our presentation, we did host an energy summit that's making specific recommendations around the need for a comprehensive review of electricity and energy supply, taking into account technology evolution. And one of the major threats that we've identified is that, particularly with major industry and commercial enterprises and buildings, we have many of current customers moving off the municipal grid, and the responsibility, therefore, is shifted to the domestic grid. And that places a greater burden for sustaining our local government to domestic rate payers as opposed to commercial rate payers. And we think that also requires attention. And the results of the energy summit are available for engagement and interrogation. With regards to the matter of water, I think it's important to indicate that the work that we are doing with the Dutch, we see as in a normative way. So we're saying that there are three municipalities where we've identified water and sanitation, and we'd be able to identify technology systems and processes that help us address water and sanitation, and we'd be able to then distill between different categories of local government that would be able to respond to the challenges. Now, we're saying the work should be normative to the extent that what you extract from the report should be able to be replicated in other local authorities. So the support that's been provided to three municipalities should enable us to generate a report that enables support for the rest of the system. We also accept that the SALGA, we cannot assume or subsume the responsibility of the departments themselves. So to the extent that we build partnerships, this should enable us to generate policy and normative systems that we can either use as mechanisms to lobby for changes in policy, legislation, or can be translated into implementation at different municipalities at different points where these become important. I think the comment that says that we should continue enhancing the way in which we work to support local governments is welcome, to the extent that the comment is also acknowledging that we cannot ultimately assume the responsibility, taking into account our mandate but also the resources at our disposal. We cannot take over the responsibility of the respective line function departments in national government. So a lot of the work that we do is policy advocacy, institutional support, generating reports and standards that would enable local government to implement at different points. There was a point made with regard to the need, what is our view on amalgamation? And whether we think that the amalgamation was necessarily a good or a bad idea. What we have advocated for is that whilst you talk about amalgamation to improve, in certain instances, efficiency and economies of scale in certain municipalities, that has not always come with the necessary financial support that enables such amalgamation to become, to reach its optimal benefits that it should be able to reach. And what we've been arguing with national government that it is important that such amalgamation is supported by the necessary fiscal instruments that would ensure that we're able to reach the results. Because the reality is that if you put two municipalities that are small with very little capacity together, you don't always have 1+1 that equals municipalities that have capacity. In fact, you might even be impacting on them negatively unless you manage the transition of that amalgamation. So we think that the necessary support should be provided in instances where there are municipalities that are amalgamated. Just to make the last comment on my side so that I can leave some of the issues to my colleagues, is to say that the report that we generated, Honorable Masondo, on the book that was published at the World Urban Forum is available. We can make it available to members of the committee, and it has valuable information to the extent that it has identified interventions on spatial transformation in the country, what important lessons there are, a contribution from South Africa's point of view to the discourse, but also what are the legislative policy and fiscal instruments necessary to ensure that we're able to achieve those objectives. From that point of view, it also raises the question, whilst PLUMA as an intervention has been quite valuable, we think that out of there comes out now a number of lessons that we need to factor into how you ensure that you can review it to ensure that it functions more optimally than it currently is. So the policy intent of PLUMA, no doubt is ideal, but we think that there's room for improvement in that regard. Honorable Chairperson, if I may allow my colleagues to also make comments.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Just want to zoom in the issue of this Belango bonus, which Honorable was just talking about in other forum. As SARCA, what we've done, we've invited the Minister of Police through our MINMEC, and our minister is on board, and we are trying to resolve the issue, but locally at different provinces, especially where we are being affected. We know that it is a serious threat on our tourists, on our economy, and of course in our service delivery issues. We have not turned a blind eye. There are forums that are sitting and we are dealing with the issue. And we have also advised our security agencies that they must do what they're supposed to be doing because it's uncalled for. As much as we are saying that people need to be empowered and they need to get whatever they need, but the way they're doing it, it's a threat to the entire society. Hence, we are doing something on it. And I don't want to leave something that is very much important that sometimes they are used politically by some political parties to fight the government of the day. And we are also dealing with that matter as an association. And the second one that I want to deal with is the issue of our exchange programs that we are doing abroad as SARCA. They are really of assistance. In certain areas as SARCA, we know that there are issues of TB and HIV and AIDS and some issues. We really benefit out of these programs. And also in the issues of environment, I don't want to add more and more issues. They are really assisting. I should think we must look at it in a very positive manner rather than saying that it's of no use to do such issues because as a government we know that we are facing a backlog of many years and we need more money and more
technical know-how. So exchange programs are very much important for us as a country as a whole. But thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Councillor Boyson, the Executive Mayor of the Garden Route District Municipality. I'm also a former mayor of a BM municipality, so I've got experience in what's happening on both grounds. Chairperson, I just want to add on what our president has raised regarding the electricity issue. Currently, one of the challenges is with Eskom, where Eskom provides, because we use electricity distribution as part of our credit control policy, where we distribute as municipalities. If people are in debt or they don't pay, we cut the electricity, and within hours, people come up with the money or they come and make some arrangements to pay. But in Eskom areas, Eskom does not allow us to do that. So the debt just increases in those areas and people continue not to pay because we don't have a yardstick to come and bring them to the table so that they can pay. And then on the issue of water, I'm from the Garden Route District Municipality. We are not a water authority. But if you look at the mandate in the Constitution, we're supposed to play that space. Now, that puts us under pressure that, I'm going to make examples of two municipalities, Kanaland and Oudtshoorn Municipality. They are sitting with water crisis issues at the moment. And they call my municipality. But because we're not a water authority, we don't even have engineers, you know, to go and assist in that matter. And we have no reason to have engineers because we're not a water authority. And we provide tankers, which is also not good enough. So I think we really should look into what is constitutionally required as well, and we get capacitated in that matter. Because we do want to get into that space. Because we're also aware of a court case where a district municipality was found guilty in court because a Bue municipality ran into water problems. And what the judge said is that the district municipality was supposed to oversee and coordinate and get into that space. So we don't want to get into a similar situation. So it's one of the things that we need to look into as what districts need to be participated on.
Thank you, I must say, Councillor Tao, the president of SALDA, and the CEO, they did report it to the NEC of SALDA that there is a concern of SALDA priority. And the NEC understood that priorities are set by members, because association is a member association. It's member-driven. And as members sat, deliberated on the report received from President Dao, then they saw nothing wrong for members to determine what should happen. And as member-based association, I think that matter, it plays, and that is why in our priorities of focus, we are informed about the interest of members. I think the other issue, Chair, that I must maybe deal with, or attempt to deal with, is the Section 71 report raised there. My learning leader here, Honorable, you will recall and know that SALDA to receive Section 71 report are not mandatory. It is the responsibility of the cooperative governments and traditional affairs to receive such reports, and the Treasury. Now, what SALDA did, because our understanding of the system called Section 71 report is to, at the earlier stages of development, to be able, as a system, to pick up possible dangers and risks. And when those dangers and risks are picked up, then there should be some assistance. And you might want to call it by name and call that assistance as Section 154.
What we are saying, and I think the National Treasurer research work, it confirmed what Salga it has been saying and it, what it said on the local government week, that the usage of Section 139 doesn't yield results. Instead, it makes municipalities to be more worse off. And I think it's something that the committee must appreciate. And then say, what is it that we can do extraordinarily if the instrument available, one of the trusted says, it seemingly it has its gaps and problems. It then means it requires a particular innovative way of dealing with the matter pertaining to Section 129. I think to me, it is important for the committee, and that is why Salga thought it is important to place it here, because it is important that the committee to look at. The last issue on my side, Chair, is on the billing system. I'm told that the constitutional drafters, they did this very well, and maybe they were very strategic, not to create tiers of government, but to create spheres of government, interdependent and interrelated. Now, how could you, in the same government, have a different system managed by SARS, which it makes government, both national and provincial, be efficient and effective in terms of its collection? And you can't use that system in the local state, which you have by an interest for local state to improve its collection capability. And the idea, it says, it is important, fortunately talking to legislatures, it is important that don't confine the views only in local state. Think about what could be the contribution of other level of government in assisting a government. I think that is important to us. The second issue, Chair, is that you'll read many legislation. The legislation says there should be no councillor owes the municipality. But the legislation, it doesn't say there should be no public office bearer that owes municipal services. Okay. Or senior officials employed in other levels of government. Okay. It same apply to businesses who owe the municipalities and get away and do businesses in other areas because there is no single system. And the suggestion is, say, can't the legislatures consider possibility of finding a way that is unitary, that is beneficiary even to local states? Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. Let us take another
thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll just compliment on areas that have not been responded to, and one of those areas on red restructuring, there's been responses. Honorable Milham, you raised the issue of senior managers in municipalities that have been recruited, and what is happening on the issue of the relationship with the payment of salaries. We are raising the point that it creates problems and it exerts a lot of pressure on the bottom-up aspirations of any municipality to recruit people. When you look at the convention of the use of competency assessment and the battery of measures that are used, they are universally used for developmental purposes. But uniquely in local governments, they are used as a basis to attach your salary scale. We think that is not appropriate. It has got nothing to do with our expression whether we want to get the best people in local government, but there's no direct correlation with somebody who is assessed and that person is ranked as meeting the requirements. And if the person is meeting the requirement at a basic of one, therefore there is a scientific determination to the salary. And you go to public service, it's expressly determined in the public service, you can't use it for salary. But why is it meant to be used like that in local government? That's our concern. And we are not saying those who are incompetent should then be appointed and rewarded highly. That's not the thesis. The thesis is that look at experience, look at the qualification, look at the track record, and be able to use universally acceptable system. It could be, hey, you place people at an entry level, or you place people at another level. The truth is, somebody sits in a municipality, the CFO, is an MM. The municipality decides to renew your contract, and the regulations are now in force. And what it does, it then says, no, the person must go through minimum competency assessment. So I go, I apply for renewal, and I've been a CFO doing very well at Itekwini. And the outcome says, you have been deemed to be minimum. So the outcome then says, you must be paid far less. So what is the scientific logic of that? There's no relationship. Is it applied elsewhere in private sector? Is it applied in public service? No. So why is it uniquely applied to local government? That's our question on the matter. So we think it is not a dismissive issue about it must not be used. It is about saying in the matrix of the uses, let's not use instruments that bluntly interpret use of salaries based on the competencies. Secondly, we support the assessment of competence for development purposes. We support general professionalization of local government, no doubt. SALGA is for that, but we think that other instruments carry unintended consequences around that. The areas of VBS and other areas, I think the scandals are publicly known around the matter and measures that are being taken by curators around that area. What leadership of SALGA has expressed around this matter here in Parliament and other platforms where we have appeared on it, we are significantly weakened as SALGA because all information of Section 71 goes to National Treasury and then it goes to COFTES. We are not on the loop for information. So we are not possible in a loop where we could know who invests with who. So Treasury sits with that information. Sits with that information. So we are as well likely to learn from everybody else on the matter. And we are asking that in our engagement with Treasury, the amendments of the MFMA, the amendment of the system, they must allow us to form part of receiving documentation so that we don't only look at the VBS, but broadly on the key risks that we are flagging, so that we know when water boards are facing significant liquidity issues. If we get Section 208 reports, if it gets Section 201 reports, 71 reports, how will we be able to do so? So in that case, we fully support generally the measures that are being done to prevent these issues going forward. In terms of our programs that are aimed at municipalities, yes, all our programs internationally, they are directly linked to municipalities and they are not a broad linkage. So it's a specific program on governance. It's a specific program on capacity building, a specific program on financing reform, specific program on climate-proof investment, specific program on LED. All of those, they are about building capacity. So there's a direct correlation with a program, regardless of whether it's funded nationally or internationally. Part of our refinement of the three goal areas, we are able to assess where the dominant focus on. So when we allocate programs, we are able to say governance is a core focus area, but I think, Honorable Milleham, we'll be able to welcome ideas on how we can reprioritize even funding. So where there's a major pressure in province A on governance, then the reflection of our resources must also correspond and so on. So we welcome those issues. On MSCOA, we raised the matter. We raised our concern. They are a major challenge. They are very much welcome as intervention. But arriving at an institution where there's level of capacity so low, it also corresponds as such. So what are we doing as SALGA? We run sessions with municipalities on MSCOA support, working with Treasure. There are teams that are in different areas on generic advice, but there's also teams specifically on specific enablers, so at MSCOA determinations assist municipalities. So we truly support that issue. the issue of billing has been responded. There's a need, perhaps, Chairperson, to look at re-examination of instruments around targeting support to municipalities. You look at the grant infrastructure that is there for local government. At some stage, it was 23 grants. Restructured to 15. I'm not sure specifically how many now. But let's pick up one grant. There's a grant called Municipal Systems Grant. Municipal System Support. Why is this grant not modeled in such a way that it looks at the system that is underpinning ability to collect revenue? Billing. And we target improvement of billing systems in municipalities. So it will be important that we retailer some of them as opposed to a demand request from a member. We should be able to say, 96 of you, you are now under collecting. These are weaknesses. The grant we are directing is aimed at this. So that we limit the scope of choosing using the grant for other purposes when we see the direct vulnerabilities around those areas. We will be able to provide you, Honorable Milham, with the SALGA framework as well as the study of a treasury that we are referring to in terms of Section 139 in detail. When we finish, I'll get your details and provide. On the amalgamation of municipalities, again, there's ongoing work we are doing on the support areas. In the main, we are saying they must be preceded by a very detailed report. So it's not only a grant system that says the following aid will be amalgamated, therefore there is a grant. What underpins effective assessment? Because some of these municipalities, when they are amalgamated, there is no capacity to manage even records. Where are the asset registers? So there's no transition tool by AG to say the following three were just undergoing amalgamation. They apply exactly the same measures. And many of them, they get exposed. They get exposed, and they will then have declining and other things. So we want to have a robust instrument to determine what needs to be funded so that we don't land up in the same page as Swanee, amalgamating Bronkhorstspruit. And then you end up having an allocation of 50 million. The city undertakes a comprehensive assessment. It says we need 2 billion rand because this part of the city brings huge backlog, and then we are sitting with that. So there has to be a very scientific determination around this area so that it's not done ad hoc. The area of detailed work on the STR, we fully agree, Honorable Masondo, on the program. We are currently piloting this program. We started in the Vaal Triangle to look at nodal development, but we have chosen a regional scale development. As we speak, we are in DR, in Northern Cape, bringing on board Free State, Northern Cape, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and we have now finalized core indicators of development. So this multi-encompassing approach has already attracted premiums to put resources on some of the improvement areas around those corridor development. So we will be able to share with the committee as time goes on how we are beginning to surface the results that come out of these areas. It's still at an early stage, agrarian revolution. Yes, we agree, we are working with the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs, as well as the COCTA branch of traditional leaders to look at how the area of agrarian reform, because we've got corridors. There's an agri-belt corridor that links Free State, it links Northern Cape, it links Eastern Cape. We also have coastal belts. We also have mining belts in all our core intervention working with partners. So our SDR program takes into account various typologies that we'll be using to support development. So the agri-rent reform will also form part of that equation. Can the SALGA book be made available? Yes. I think last time we had the APP, we carried some copies when we came to present APP. We will definitely package another set and bring to the committee on the book for the urban development. The major risks facing local government, we have reflected on those, and they do require significant interventions on those areas, not only by SALGA, but the multiple stakeholders, as the President of SALGA indicates. The specific areas of support, Honorable Commissioner, on the direct support to municipalities. What we are reflecting is areas of direct support in different domains, governance domain, capacity building, on planning, as well as generic support. So we are on the ground on the support with our limited capacity. But there's other partners when we go, there's structure, there's treasury, and so on. And on the area of 43 municipalities, is their return on investment, as Honorable Milleham has indicated, yes, there's a return investment. The 43 are red zone municipalities. And on those red zone, it's municipalities where we know they have not submitted annual financial statement during audit period. When they shall have submitted, they are disclaimed. But how many players are involved? Section 154 imposes obligation to provinces to play a role. National and provincial treasuries. National and provincial coffers. So SALGAL's limited capability is not to assist all 42. We have flagged 18 that we have been, and out of that, 7 has improved on those areas. Return investment, yes. Very positive, despite the limitation. We would like to see the full picture. And I think we will continue work with other partners around this area. On the internal finance management, as per the briefing that you have received from Treasury, yes, on the area of irregular expenditure, we incurred irregular expenditure, and it was on a transaction that pertains to acquisition, and we were required to follow a transversal contract. And what we did, we looked at the principles of Section 217 of the Constitution, competitiveness, and we went to the manufacturer, and we found an offer that provided a discount structure, and we were able to acquire, and we reported that. And then Treasury said to us, you must be able in future to follow transversal contracting and demonstrate to us that you have taken action on the officials that had well-intended objectives in mind, but they have misstep on the matter. And we disciplined those officials, and we have disclosed it in the report as such in terms of that area. But there was no intended criminality or so on, and we're training people to improve around that. I'll leave the rest to the CFO to cover the area of 14,000 irregular expenditure and why we're sitting with the 8 million rand that is viewed as under expenditure.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, in responding to the operating surplus of 8 million, which is read and interpreted as under expenditure, I think the point of departure here is to firstly highlight, Chair, that SALGA, in terms of its own funding model, does not get a grant, say, that fully funds it. In fact, 90% of our revenue emanates from membership fees. Now, what as an organization we have done, we have returned through to Treasury, because there are timing time lapses as to when you invoice for those membership levies and when you collect. So in terms of Section 53 of the PFMA, National Treasury has provided the organization with approval to accumulate surpluses. The surpluses, what they are intended for, is to bridge a gap between when we actually issue our invoices, which we normally issue on 1st April each year, and in terms of the SALGA Constitution, those invoices are payable 122 days later on the 31st of July. Now, during that first quarter of our own financial year, there's always that time lag in terms of collection. The part of our cash flow management strategy is to ensure that we have adequate cash resources to bridge the financing requirements during that period prior to our members paying us. And lastly, as an organization that is also focused on cost containment and reducing its cost base, in fact, in terms of the recurring expenditure base, what the National Executive Committee of SALGA has done is also approved an asset acquisition strategy. Now, based still on the 90% revenue that you do get, you need over time to build cash-backed reserves, such that you are unable to acquire those assets, like I think we did in the year under review, wherein if you one were to look at the financial, on our annual report, one will note that a major acquisition in terms of administrative buildings for SALGA Northwest had been acquired. And that then relinquishes the organization from further recurring expenditure in terms of operating leases for administrative buildings. That deals with that part. And then in regards to the 14,000 rand that has been incurred of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it is something that as an organization we do in serious light. What has happened, I think if one looks on page 212 of the annual report on note 41, one will note that in fact in every instance where the organization has incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure that ordinarily arises through a late payment of a creditor, that happens as part of cash flow management, as well as the timing differences when the actual supplier issues the invoice and when payment is actually made. But what has been happening is that we do recoup those, we pursue the same with the suppliers, and notwithstanding the extent of the amount being 14,000 rand, but it's something if one were to look in also in the comparative year of the recoupment that as an organization we still continue to pursue. In regard to audit fees, perhaps when one compares the prior year to the reporting year, firstly on this I'll start with what our accounting standards require. You need to accrue for all the expenditure that you have incurred at reporting date. However, in terms of the SAICA circulars, for audit fees you cannot accrue for that. The only thing that I have at reporting date to ensure that my liability is correctly measured and then therefore is correctly stated in terms of its existence is the statement that I get from the Auditor General. Now, there are timing differences that do occur, that when one compares that versus the 31st March 2017, the statement I have from Auditor General would reflect an X amount of which I would raise an accrual based on that versus in 2018. Hence then, because of those timing differences, has shown that the audit fees incurred for the year have actually increased whilst it's purely a timing difference. Chair, I thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, colleagues. Of course, SAICA is always available to engage with us. I think we have exhausted the issues. We should agree that we are going to meet somewhere with other committees of national assembly, maybe energy, because their major risk we should discuss with them. The finance committee, energy, water, all those. Jointly we should meet in some workshop type of a thing, and SAICA also invited to come and engage on this matter. And then because I don't think it would be correct that colleagues come here, they raise real major risks, we just take them and move on, because they're going to happen. They are happening already. Professor Kubisa, so that's what you should do. And we will try to arrange that in the offices. They will be in touch, organizing, ensure that we need to analyze some of the issues. Of course, there will be other issues that we'll discuss. And because SAICA is performing very well, the temptation for us really to take them as if they are a department. It's very high. It's very high sometimes. They are not a department. But because they are performing very well, we thought that we can solve all our problems in local government. They wouldn't. They wouldn't do so. The department, as it comes tomorrow, they must be accounting on some of the issues that we are raising. Because the department, anyway, has such responsibility for performing this issue. I just think that there are also colleagues from the CLL. They've been outside here, standing there because there's no accommodation. And for almost 3.5 hours now, I think it would be unfair to remain doing that. I think we should allow SAICA to chairperson of the president of SAICA just to conclude the remarks, and we allow you to move. Then we'll be then in touch to finalize the motion.
Thank you very much once again, Chairperson. Lastly, to just acknowledge the positive comments received from yourself and members of the committee, we do understands that we have a responsibility to continue working with the government to ensure that the local government improves its performance, and that we all collectively strive towards ensuring that we build a system of local government that is efficient for the country as the cornerstone of our democracy and service delivery model in the country. And we are ready to continue engaging with Parliament, including, as you are suggesting, possibly an engagement with a multiplicity of committees about some of the key risks and challenges and some of the interventions that need to be made. We do think that there are opportunities if we collectively apply our minds to solutions on how we can resolve some of these problems, and we will continue generating ideas and engaging with all stakeholders, and of course receiving counsel and advice from yourselves with regards to areas where we can ensure improvement. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let us allow you space. You can remain here until 12 midnight, or you maybe also have other commitments, you are allowed to do so. Councillor Sow.
The permission, President, that next time we are going to deploy a person to international trip so that I can make the invitation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we must go to Indonesia. Okay, thank you very much for this. Someone else should request someone very serious to come inside. Yeah, they've been standing there for really too long.
Is this not the presentation? Or is this the annual report?
That's the annual report. It's not the presentation.
Is it? I don't know. Colleen gave it. We're looking now.
This may be with us too long also, but I don't think that we have to give you a platform. It's up to you how much detail you want to be in your report. Members of Parliament are here until 12 midnight. We've got absolutely no flight to take. Therefore, we've got absolutely no interest on flight takers. If we give you a platform, you take 1 hour, 4 hours, is your business. It's just one lead before we finalize every discussion. members by and large are very detailed men of business. We welcome really from the leadership of the Municipal Demarcation Board. As a Jane, we welcome in the team. We want to invite you to take your platform. Time really rely on you. If they are flight at 3, you want to end at 4, it's your business really. We'll take our time, we must take your time and see what we can do to address some of these. Thank you for coming, and it's very important for us to hear what are the issues and how to engage as members of parliament. We will then invite you for purposes of the meeting. We can introduce the chief, and then you take over, give us an overview, and then you dedicate whoever is responsible to the team in terms of your plan. Mr. President, can we invite you to do so?
Thank you very much, Chair President. Good afternoon to honorable members. With me, I have the Deputy Chair, Mr. Adam, and our CEO and the CFO. We, in terms of the program that was sent to us, we have 20 minutes for the presentation and 40 minutes for the discussions, and we tried to structure our presentation in that manner. I hope we do manage to stick to that time. I will just do the introductory part of the presentation, and the CEO will do the rest. I'm not going to go through the slides that are indicating the obvious. Our mandate hasn't changed, the vision of the MDB, our strategic outcomes. We just have to state this because at all times we need to be sure that whatever we are reporting on is still in line with our mandate and in line with what we promised to deliver in terms of our strategic plan and ATP. But in the previous session, if I may go to slide number 8, in our previous briefing with the committee, there were issues that were raised, which we thought we should then also brief the committee about. At that time, it was the issue of the capacity assessment that wasn't taking place, and that has not taken place in a long time, and we need to just report that is going on. In terms of the plan, it was supposed to be concluded now in October, but there's some slight delays due to non-responsiveness by certain municipalities, but that's been taken care of. And this next slide, just the highlights that I would want to present before I hand over to the CEO to take you through the rest of the report, is just to indicate some comfort that we need to report as a board. We are beginning to reap the rewards of a stabilizing executive. We had the CEO, as you know, that throughout the tenure we didn't have a CEO in the organization, largely the larger part of the period. Now with the CEO being there, with the CFO being there, the executive stabilizing, we have for the first time, and the board in so many years, achieving an 89% achievement of its predetermined objective. It is about just about 20% improvement within 1 year, and the board is getting comfort out of that to see that we are ultimately stabilizing. We did, during this period, receive an allocation of 7 million, which assisted in terms of the public, enhancing public participation when we are busy with the technical adjustments. It is appreciated. Unfortunately, this is not going to the baseline and therefore not able to assist us with the long-term planning of the organization, but this came in very handy in the public participation process that took place over a period of a year. Showed that if we were to conduct public participation in that manner all the time, whenever there is any activity of the board, then we would have a more stable local government, and not to say everybody will be happy, but at least the level of participation would minimize dissatisfaction within communities. The seminars that were convened during the year, the first on the categorization of municipalities into category A, you would know, honourable members, that we always have problems, particularly as the board, getting sometimes inundated with requests for certain municipalities or cities or government itself requesting for certain areas to be classified as category A municipalities or metros. And this creates a challenge because often those proposals come in for areas that are far from meeting the requirements that are stated in the Municipal Structures Act. So this particular exercise was meant to come up with indicators that would unpack the four broad factors that describe what should be a Category A municipality in such a manner that the board would be more consistent in determining areas as metros, and not only for the board, but for those areas, whoever might be requesting for it, would be able to just run themselves through those unpacked factors and indicators to see that they don't qualify even perhaps before an application can be put forward. The other seminar was done in conjunction with the HSRC, which was on citizen engagement. Particularly, they focused on the area of Vuane, and that looked into underlying issues that are often not seen whenever there is a protest, as issues underneath the surface, as they went in and engaged with communities in there. The fifth point, which is the last that I will talk about, relates to what we managed to do, and this is owed to the 7 million that we received from COPTA, just to see the number of stakeholders and the number of engagements that we had over an extended period of a year to engage with the stakeholders on the ground, including communities, regarding the last exercise of the redetermination, which was mainly technical adjustments that took place in the past year. And again, we credit that to the slight improvement in terms of budget that we received from COPTA. But before I hand over to the CEO to proceed with the rest of the presentation, Chairperson, I need to indicate to the House that this is the last year of the tenure of the board. The term of the board comes to an end in February 2019, meaning that this is the last time the board will be appearing as the people who have been appointed in 2014. And the last slide would indicate just how grateful we are for the engagement that we have had with yourselves and the positive criticisms that we received, and how that assisted towards building this organization, which we will be leaving satisfied that we are on track, and it wouldn't be so difficult for the people who will be taking over after us, unlike how we found the organization when we came in. If you allow Mr. Chairperson, I'll ask the CEO to proceed with the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let us invite the CEO. Time is on your side. It's up to you how you want to decide to work your time. If you want 4 hours, you can get it. But you want them fly straight.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to make it short and straight to the point. In the slides that are following, specifically slide 10, we have had around 47 targets that were planned for the year. 42 were achieved and 5 were not achieved. The next slide is the same with the one before, but it's also just indicating in terms of the four programs that we have. That in program one, we had 91% achievement, in program two, 100%, program three, 75%, and program four, 100%, which in total is aggregated to 42 against the 5 that were not achieved. The next slide is just going into the detail of those planned targets, so I'll just zoom into the planned targets as well as the actual achievement. If we look from slide number 12 to slide number 19, those are more of the targets that we're relating to the governance aspects of the board and the internal focus in terms of what the institution was looking at. So if you look at the first one of reports on the implementation of board resolution, when we joined the board, the chair advised that there was some indication of board resolutions that were not implemented, and we then put together the governance structures that looked at the implementation of board resolutions, and that is being reported on a quarterly basis. And we also had some training that was done for board members, and also some reports that we put together regarding the compliance with the applicable legislation. The next slide, 12, is speaking generally around the number of positions that we have and how those positions were evaluated and graded. And all those positions that we had planned to evaluate, we evaluated 39 instead of 32. And the occupancy rate, we wanted to maintain it at 90%. We are maintaining it at 94%. And all performance agreements of all staff were signed at the required time. And the equity report, as well as the health awareness program, and other initiatives related to employee health wellness were all performed. Slide 15, the issue around the employee satisfaction survey. All this, like I said, Chair, are more looking at the internal aspect, and I will take questions from slide 12 to slide 19. But I just want to zoom into slide 18, because that's where we start with the two areas that we didn't achieve. One is the area of achieving a clean audit, as we have indicated to the committee before, that it will be difficult for the board to achieve a clean audit because of prior issues. The CFO will talk to some of the issues. And secondly, one other matter that we could not achieve was the strategic risk register. It was more a technical matter. If you remember when we presented in March, we were saying our performance was going to be 91%. And when we were looking at the technical indicator description of this particular indicator, we had a problem of saying the board never set and resolved on the strategic risk register. So we said, let's play on the safe side so that we don't really say things that we were not going to be found wanting. Slide 19 is all relating to structure. strategies that we have adopted, the fraud prevention strategy and the plan that we reviewed and implemented, and also the issue of the supply chain regulations and the funding strategy. Slide number 20, Chairperson, talks to some of the highlights that the Chair has indicated. In terms of the consultation processes this time around, like we have said, we have been able to interact with those critical stakeholders on matters of demarcation. We also consulted with all the municipalities that were affected with the technical redetermination process. And the result of that consultation was that when we went to the Section 26 processes, we received some few recommendations and comments, and when we went to the objection process in terms of Section 21.5, we only received one objection, which showed that indeed the resources that were available to us for public participation and reference yielded some results. On slide 21, it does confirming that all those identified communities were consulted, and there were 37 such consultations, 17 being affected communities and 20 being farms in all provinces, and all in all it was straddling around 81 municipalities. The legal notices, when we started with the Section 26 processes, we had planned that we would do two legal notices per province. We did 36 legal notices, which meant an additional 18 notices that we have done. With regard to slide number 23, we had planned that we will have special boundary descriptions in 85 municipalities, and this Chair, we have been able to achieve that, and this entails a point-to-point description of municipal boundary location using man-made and natural landmarks like farms, rivers, and roads. And this will assist us as we do redeterminations to say, if we are saying we are redetermining this particular municipality, what is the extent of this particular municipality locally? We have finalized the ward delimitation policy and standard operating procedures, updated it, and the board has approved it. And it has approved it in time so that when we start with the ward delimitation process, we are going to be able to utilize that. The next slide is the issue of capacity assessment that we did not achieve. Chair, you will remember that this is the matter that the Chair has referred to earlier to say it was raised as a concern in the last meeting of last year, that this is the critical mandate of the board and we have not been able to deal with it. And at that time, we indicated that we were supposed to do capacity assessment for 81 municipalities, and we indicated then that the delay in the procurement process was actually going to impact negatively on achieving that. But on hindsight, we realized that it was also a good thing that we delayed, because then we got the funding to focus on all the municipalities, and now we are conducting a capacity assessment for all the municipalities in the country. Slide 25, we have dealt with the operating procedures to deliver advisory services. As part and parcel of the mandate of the board, the fourth one on advisory services, we then said, what are the procedures that we need to have for us to provide that advisory services? We have the research strategy and the implementation plan that we have developed, and we have the publications internally that we have looked at. And this one of one peer review journal article that was published, you see that we have not achieved that. The reason was that while we had the article, for you to have a peer review, you need a university to do that, and they were not really aligned to our time frame, so we couldn't achieve that. The MOUs, we had planned to enter into MOUs, five of them. We were able to do three. The other two were finalized, but the institutions that we were entering into them could not sign them in time for us to present to board. The research seminars, the chair has touched on those. And with regard to trying to locate some or archive some of the studies that are happening within the demarcation sector, we have around 39 studies that we have archived. We had planned to archive around 20. Most of these studies, most of them are dealing with the issues of demarcations internationally and also issues that are raised within the country, especially around the viability of municipalities that are demarcated. It might be reports from the FFC, it might be report from the Treasury. Those studies we do have. We have done the knowledge and information management strategy because we were saying it will align with our theme of being a knowledge, a special knowledge hub, and that the board approved in time. Slide number 28. With regard to the geographic information and database management strategy, we are also saying we have dealt with that, and it is aligning with what I've said earlier in terms of how we become the special knowledge hub. And we have also implemented the mapping norms and standards that we have developed. And that was done in quarter two. We have finalized the framework for public participation in municipal boundary redetermination. And we also have two partnerships to enhance public education and awareness. And we had also distributed booklets when we were dealing with the public participation process on the technical redeterminations to those municipalities that I've mentioned earlier. With regard to public stakeholder education and awareness activities, we have conducted four of those, and we have finalized the manual on the methodology and processes for public participation. Now, in relation to the audit outcomes, we obtained an unqualified audit opinion, and I think it has been happening for more than 8 years now. As we indicated last time that even when we were having this indicator of clean audit, we knew that with the prior issues that were raised on how the institution procured certain things, we were not going to achieve that clean audit. The key findings that the AG provided was more around some misstatements that were identified in program 2 and 3 and 4, and also the issue around the leasing of the building of the demarcation board that was done in 2014, and I think the CFO will talk to that when she talks to the issue of some of the irregular expenditure that has been incurred. And Chair, if you agree, if I could allow the CFO to take slide 35 and 36 up to 37, and then we'll conclude with the challenges and some interventions.
Okay, thank you. CEO, thank you, Chairperson of the committee. Before I can go to slide
I don't hear you.
There has been actually an improvement in the year under review. There was only one new case of irregular extension in the year under review, and the amount was not very material. The material amount was with regard to the building that, as the CEO has indicated, was entered into in 2014. So there was an investigation that was undertaken by the board, a forensic investigation to look at the procurement of the lease. And there were some irregularities that came out of that report, mostly administrative. Unfortunately, that resulted in us having to declare irregular expenditure for the entire building. So our irregular expenditure had moved from 7 million to almost 20 million because of the building. The other issue was with regard to the procurement of local content, which we didn't complete some standard forms that we're supposed to complete when we buy items such as furniture. But that was procured in 2017. Only the payment happened in 2018 financial year. So those are the instances of irregular expenditure that that have been picked up by AG. So coming back to slide 35, as you can see, and as we've indicated before, our spending is in accordance with the activities that the board undertakes. So that first slide there is just indicating how we are spending throughout the years from 2014. And then the reason for underspending in this financial year, we've underspent by 9.6 million. That 9.6 million is due to the capacity assessment, which started in March 2018 and has been discussed already. So there's about 6 million of that is for capacity assessment and has been committed. The other amount was for public participation radio campaigns. The campaigns happened in April. And it's part of the funds that we received, the 7 million was for the radio campaigns, but these were done in April. Some public participation awareness campaigns, especially for newspapers, were done in March, and then the radio ads were only done in April. Those funds have also been committed as part of the commitment. And going through to slide 37, we're just indicating the approved medium-term expenditure framework, which we presented in April. We've got, in the current financial year 2018, our budget is 54 million and 57 million and 60 million over the medium term. This budget does not include our activities like we're going to the delimitation process now. So it's not included there because that's just our baseline. So also the fees that we need, as we've seen with the previous public participation, we don't have those funds at the moment because this is just it just covers our normal day-to-day operations. What has been happening in the past is we'll just deplete our surplus. We've got a surplus of around 20 million right now, and that ends up being depleted while we're going through the delimitation process, for example. And that is a very dangerous place to be because we're supposed to be covering our liabilities at all times. That's it from me. Thank you.
If I may just continue, Chairperson, before I go into the challenges, just to explained to the committee the irregular expenditure that the CFO mentioned. It's an irregularity that was discovered by the board, effectively, not by the AG, and we instituted an investigation. So the AG was simply interrogating a forensic investigation that we had instituted into the acquisition of the building, and that acquisition was concluded before the board took office. So that is the irregular expenditure of an amount that the CFO was talking about. The key challenges, the board once more indicates, Chairperson, that a delayed process of amendment of the legislation will have a negative bearing on the upcoming ward delimitation process. That is, much as we know now what the public is unhappy about in relation to ward delimitation and boundary redeterminations. There is not much that can be done because the legislation stays the same. We're going to conduct the ward delimitation as the law provides, because we don't have any amendment as yet. We do recognize those concerns that the public has. Most of them are quite legitimate, and therefore that's why they are some of the issues that are contained now in what would be a legislative review. Inadequate funding of the organization continues to be a problem, and there continues to be a lack of appreciation or understanding of the mandate of the board by the likes of Treasury, for example. I don't know how many times has the organization been engaging with Treasury to try and explain why the funding of the organization cannot stay as it is now. There are quite a number of expensive exercises that people don't link to the public participation. If we direct funding towards capacitating the board to do effective public participation, have some regional presence, that would minimize unhappiness on the ground. That would minimize some protests that you see that are often very destructive. It's like we are not able to identify areas where we can close the tap other than leaving the situation until it explodes and becomes even more expensive. Once more, I'm saying there's no guarantee that everybody will be happy. Demarcation is not something that can make everybody happy. But if we intensify public participation and minimize our reliance on government institutions, because that's where unhappiness begins, that's where people's perceptions are such that people are saying, you're not independent enough, you might be leaning on organizations or institutions that have got a vested interest in the process. And we need to reconsider the issues of funding of the board. The inadequate spatial descriptions, and we spoke about this when we were here in March regarding our strategic plan and APT, that the traditional areas in this country, most of them largely, are, we're talking about unsurveyed, it's referred to as unsurveyed state land, meaning that you won't even know physically what the extent is, and this creates a problem whenever you conduct the boundary redeterminations if certain areas cannot even be identified. This community's traditional areas continuously say the board is splitting their area, but you can't even physically know where that area is because it's not described. It's not properly mapped. There are no proclamations that indicate where the area of a traditional area A ends and the other one starts. In terms of the upcoming or delimitation process, as I indicated, there's nothing that can be done about the legislation because it stays the same. The board is going to do the same. We would just try to conduct extensive public participation to ensure that people understand why wards are done in a particular manner, for them to understand that there are certain things that the board cannot change. For example, the formula is not set by the board, and the number of councillors are not determined by the board. The board just comes in to conclude the process and redetermine wards, and often they are determined in a manner that does not make people happy. But yes, the extensive engagement might at least work. But in the meantime, we are working with COGDA and urging them to expedite the legislative review process so that at least when the actual boundary determination starts after the 2021 local government elections, we should be doing that under a legislation that is reviewed, and therefore we will be able to minimize of challenges that we are quite aware of right now. The review of the funding model is very critical, and the issue that I already alluded to of the boundary description in traditional areas, that is a project that's underway by the Rural Development and Department of Traditional Affairs. Now, in conclusion, Chairperson, yes, the funding requests have already been submitted and engagements are going on. The board is not able to implement the rationalization strategy and intensify or implement its public participation strategy without additional funding. Of course, in terms of the upcoming water delimitation process that must start in March, April 2019, we're looking forward to the timely publication of the formula so that this process starts in time. The sooner the process starts, then the MDB has sufficient time to engage with the public such that whenever this process is finalized, we're having a few people who maybe are given that they have not been consulted sufficiently. We come into the end of the tenure of the board, as I've already indicated this, Chairperson, and the board is very grateful for the support that we received, the constructive criticism from the committee that assisted in us developing the organization to what it is today. Chairperson, on the 31st of January 2019, 31st and 1st of February, the board will be hosting a conference that brings together local and international experts on local government to engage in a process that celebrates 20 years of demarcation in South Africa. I think there are certain things that we really are not giving ourselves credit sufficiently about as a country, because even when people engage with the people internationally in very developed countries, they get surprised as to how independent you think a demarcation board can be. In other countries, demarcation is done by government, and we know that government cannot be apolitical. And it's like we're taking our own constitution for granted. The fact that you have a demarcation board that is independent, that does work as it does, is something that is revered internationally by other organizations that are linked to demarcation in other countries. So we will be hosting this to celebrate 20 years of demarcation in South Africa, to look at what are the things that need to be improved, but largely to try and look into the NDP, Vision 2030, as far as it relates to local government, to say, towards 2030, what does the NDP say about local government? We have the IEDF, the Urban Development Framework, only came into existence in 2016, and demarcation has to happen within a particular context. Now, we will be looking at how this context can be created such that demarcations, as we move forward, it's not just happening that ad hoc without, trying to fall within a particular context and trying to help the country achieve what it wants to achieve in terms of local government. So, Chairperson, I think your invitation might be on your desk by now for the committee, and that event will also be coupled with an event where the new board that shall have been approved, appointed by the president, will be inaugurated. That will happen on the 31st January and 1st February 2019. We are looking forward to be handing over to the new board a detailed report that shows how far we had gone, what challenges are still there, but we're hoping as we leave, we shall have rounded up that important event that will provide a context for the new board to know how they are taking forward and taking the baton from where we shall have left. I'm not sure if Deputy Chair, you want anything in conclusion, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Yes, just to say thank you very much. Yes.
Sorry, Chair. Just one amendment to what our chair said. We did the forensic audit into the investigation into the lease and then handed that over to the AG. And it's on the AG's position then that every subsequent expenditure on the rental is fructus and restful. So it's not, the AG didn't do the investigation, we did.
Okay. Thank you very much. And take from the chair on. Madam.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for your report. It's much appreciated, and we wish you well on your endeavor. But Chair, I've got a few questions. Yesterday we had an AG report that was tabled to us. Among other things, it reflected that there was money that you have already asked for capacity assessment. You have just touched on it, but in your report you did not include it for us to understand that. That money was meant for something else, but you ended up that money not being used for the 81 municipalities. It reflects on the AG as the money that has not been used. Can you tell us why, if you still got the money to do other things? I heard you on your slide saying that you are now planning to do almost all the other municipality programs on that money, because we really, how do we trust the information when you request for this and you ended up doing something else? That's my first question, Chair. The issue, I understand again that Chair, on your, among other things that puts you on the red there, is because that you failed to table the strategic risk register on time. I wonder why now, because now you've got a fully fledged staff. In that department. I understood that the previous that you were struggling because you have no CFO and there were a lot of vacancies. Why now are you also finding yourself being not submitting documents on time when you have the fully fledged staff? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Madam.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you to the MDB for your report. I do think it's a reasonable report. I do have a couple of concerns. The first relates to the actual audit report itself. And the AG highlighted a couple of things that I want to bring to your attention. One of the root causes for the misfinding or the qualified finding, as identified by the AG, is, and I quote, management, i.e. accounting officers and senior management, did not respond with the required urgency to our messages about addressing risks and improving internal controls. In other words, they would say, here is an issue, and the MDB did not respond to that issue. So that's from the AG's report. The other thing that the AG identified as a problem, and they commended the MDB for the investigation of previous year's SCM findings. But what they did say is that there is no consequences for those findings. In other words, the consequence management of the MDB is lacking. And that then brings us back right to the very beginning of the AG document, where they talk about the status of internal controls, and they say that at the MDB, both leadership, financial and performance management, and governance are concerning. So these are things that I think that the chairperson and the CEO need to take on board going forward to the next year. Then coming to your actual document. First of all, the municipal capacity assessments. This has been something that I personally have been raising with you for the past 3 or 4 years as an issue. And it floors me that at this late stage, when you're now expected to get on with it, you're given funding for it and the like, that it's left to the very last quarter of your financial year to then implement. And as a result, it's a not achieved on your performance findings. And I think that this is something that you need to, you know, you need to start planning the work much earlier so that when it actually comes down to delivering on your performance objectives, you are able to. I think you probably set yourself up for failure in this regard by setting it as a performance target without being able to achieve it and knowing that you weren't going to be able or were unlikely to achieve it. Then I just want to talk to the CFO for a second. On your slide 37, you specifically pointed out that is your budget, your expenditure budget, excluding your activities. So how are you, and I acknowledge that you say that you're going to have to fund your activities out of your surplus, but your surplus is not that great. I mean, you don't have hundreds of millions of rand in surplus. So how exactly, given that that's your budget and what your surplus is, how are you going to do ward delimitations? How are you going to do public consultation? How are you going to do the remainder of the capacity assessments that you have to do? Because you are legally obligated to do capacity assessments on every single municipality. It's not a sample of municipalities. It's every municipality. How are you going to do it, given the financial constraints under which you are operating? Which then brings us to, well, maybe we're spending money in the wrong places. If this is our operational budget, excluding activities, maybe we're spending too much on operations. In other words, and I'm not, this is something that the board needs to actually decide for themselves. Maybe we've got too many staff. Maybe we're investing in a building or something that we shouldn't be investing in. How do we fix that to free up our funding so that we can deliver on the activities? Even if it means we have to outsource some of those activities to a service provider or whatever it might be, how do we actually make it happen? Because right now, it seems increasingly unlikely that you will have more funds to do the ward delimitation that you now need to embark on quite urgently. I mean, essentially, you've got 2.5 years to finalize ward delimitations. I think that's right. So that's something that concerns me. There was one other issue, and that was... Oh, yes. On the amendments to the Municipal Demarcation Act, according to the information that we've received as a portfolio committee, none of your recommendations have been brought forward to Parliament. In other words, we haven't seen anything. We don't know what amendments are required. And until we can process them from our side, it's basically a non-issue for us. I mean, we don't know what you want to do in these amendments. So I think it's incumbent on you, and maybe waiting on COGTA is going to be too long a process. Maybe you need to submit them to the chairperson so that we can process them as a committee. I mean, we do have the power as Parliament, as a committee of Parliament, to introduce a committee bill. It doesn't have to come from COGTA. So my point is that you're saying that your hands are tied by the Municipal Demarcation Act. And we're saying we don't know why or how your hands are tied, and bring us the amendments that you want us to make, and we can then look at them and consider them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable Dume.
I'm covered.
Yeah, covered. Honourable Matip.
Yeah, also covered.
Okay. Let me invite then the leadership to the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I could just talk to the last one. I think this is something I appreciated what the Honourable Miller is saying. We just know that as a board we don't have any mandate to work on to tables. So we're relying on COPTA. But the route that you are mentioning of the working through the committee is probably what could have been explored all the time, because this process effectively started in our second year since we took office, to realize those issues that the public has been saying, and they had been workshopped over and over, and there was no disagreement even with the local government, other players in the local government system. I think that is what we will do to perhaps just the workshop chairperson with the committee to table those amendments and the reasoning behind them, because often it is much the reasoning behind an amendment other than when somebody reads an amendment without you motivating directly why certain things shouldn't stay as they are, and what harm they make on the ground if we leave the law unchanged. I think there are a number of issues that may be misunderstanding. I think the CEO and CFO, you'll be able to respond to both the capacity assessment money. I don't think there is a disagreement. It is, AG is right. I'm not sure whether it's in how we presented that. It sounded like we are not saying the same thing about the money that has not been used in the year that we are reporting about, which is being used now to undertake the project. But I think CFO and CEO will be able to talk about those. the issues honourable Mr. Indeed, the strategic risk register also why we couldn't do things as the honourable member was asking. CEO will respond to that. The other question from Honourable Millem about the our not responding in time when AG was asking questions about the board probably. The issues of consequence management, when we have findings, CEO will add to this, but the major problem here is that most of these areas that we investigated as the board, and as you know, an investigation takes time. By the time an investigation is concluded and there are recommendations, almost all the people that are fingered by the findings have left the organization. It was only one instance where we were able to lay criminal charges against the former CEO. But effective most of the time, by the time an investigation got concluded, there are recommendations, but those people had already left the organization. But in the specific thereof, the CEO might be able to talk about. For us, it's, and I'm glad the AG had raised that, they're recognizing that they don't find things when they come to the organization. They find that we had already identified their problems, we'd already investigated. It is the consequence management thereof that they are concerned about. Apart from holding people accountable, those most of them who would have left, the benefit to the organization is that we also have learnings. Whenever any process will be undertaken similar to that, we have benchmarks. We have lessons that we know that shouldn't be repeated. There are instances where we got a legal opinion, for example, that related to the previous CFO, that of course, as no longer an employer, you can't discipline, you can't follow anything in terms of a disciplinary. But we reported to the Treasury. The matters were reported with the new employer. So there were quite follow-ups that were made until eventually the board is able to say, look, we have done everything that we are supposed to do. It's up to procurement officers in National Treasury and the new employer who employs the former CFO who was there when certain things happened to take that forward, and will be available if we are asked to testify if such a hearing takes place. But that is as far as the consequence issues related to consequence management relate. The rest is CEO and CFO, you will be able to.
With regards to the the capacity assessment, the funds that were budgeted for, the additional funds that we received from National Treasury, is what I said has been committed and will be used in the capacity assessment project. So there are no funds that have been moved. And the reason why initially it was 21 is because we only had enough, 81. We only had enough budget for 81 to do assessment for 81 and 32. And then from the 7 million that we indicated that we received from National Treasury, then we decided to do all municipalities. That's another thing that caused the delay, that instead of doing 81, we do all municipalities. And we received confirmation that we received those funds in October, Honorable Milton. We received confirmation in October, so we couldn't have been able to finalize the process by the end of the financial year, because we only received the funds in October. So there were no funds that have been moved around. Apologies if we have caused any confusion in that regard. And with regard to the strategic risk register, there was a workshop that was held with the board. And then we thought that since the workshop was done with the board, that would be sufficient as the risk register that has been approved by the board. However, it later emerged that according to our technical indicator, that we had to present the very same risk register to the board to approve it, even though they were part of the workshop that developed the risk register. So there was just that error that was there with regard to the risk register. It's not because there was a delay or there's lack of capacity or anything like that. It was just a misunderstanding. And then with regard to the budget, as I've indicated, what has been happening in the past is during the delimitation process, I made an RSA surplus. I meant to say our reserve. We've got around 20 million in our reserve. And we those reserves, apart from the 9 million for capacity assessment and the radio ads that we did in April, is to cover our liabilities. Our liabilities including leave liability, for example, and the building itself. So what has been happening in the past is those reserves will be used, and that is not proper accounting, because you have to have reserves to cover your liabilities, even though the probability of those liabilities becoming due are very low. We still have to cover. So if we enter a 5-year lease contract, we have to put funds aside for that 5-year lease contract, that should something happen, we have to pay up for the lease. We have funds in place to cover. So all the years that we've been able to fund the delimitation process and all our activities, we have been using those liabilities. So that's why sometimes when you go back into our reports from AG, you'll find that there are certain years where they say we're not financially viable because we have used up all our reserves. So we have been pleading with Treasury. Unfortunately, our plea so far has been falling on deaf ears. So I don't know if there's any way that this committee can assist us in that regard, because we are put in a very dangerous situation where, you know, we are not able to cover our liabilities, even though the probability of those liabilities becoming due are very low. We still have to cover them, to have funds to cover them.
I think the questions are covered.
They are not. They are not covered. I know it might be semantics, but the reality is that by end of February 2018, the issue of the strategic risk as a register, it was not submitted. Not that it was submitted, you still had to send it, but by the AG, that's what the AG told us. Just straight. And it also includes the five issues that you said you do in research institution collaboration agreement. for the researchers as well. It was not done. That's how it's been reported, but you put it mildly as if you were on the program. It was not done.
Let me take the issue. Firstly, the issue of the strategic risk register. Strategic risk register is what normally the board should put for management to be able to implement. Now, what happened is that the board set around November and put the strategic risk register. Now, that strategic risk register was there. Hence, the reason why we reported early this year, I had indicated a performance of 91% on our predetermined objectives. But the technicality was more on what we call the technical indicator description. It said we must have a board resolution that says this strategic risk register served in this board. That is why the CFO is saying we thought this is strategic risk register that was done by the board. So you're again submitting it for formalizing it as a resolution of the board. That was the technical issue that we're referring to. And then we said we are removing it from it from it being achieved to something that has not been achieved. That's what the AGP said. The same with the memorandum of agreement. We were saying we were supposed to have entered into five. And by the end of the financial year, we had only formalized three. So because the other two were not necessarily signed, it means we have not achieved that. So they are right to say we have not achieved that. That is why it is reflected as one of the indicators or one of the targets that we have not achieved.
Okay. Okay, colleagues, if there are no other issues, maybe the teachers and the teams here, if you then request the concluding remarks of the professor, and then we'll then adjourn colleagues for 15 minutes. When the CLL is putting its machinery here, somebody has something to eat, and then you can just do the rest.
Thank you. I think I'd already said a lot, but I just want to give the committee comfort, Honorable Madam, on the issues of that AG addressed about lack of consequence management. They may not be arising out of this annual report, but definitely consequence management is one of the things that the board has emphasized that the accounting officer must make sure it happens in the period this year, not the year we are reporting under. We actually had a senior manager who has been dismissed already, just to show that there are consequences. There is a consequence management that is being implemented in the organization. Deputy Chair, can you your concluding remarks? You lost top of the committee.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. From my side, it's been a robust period. And I really appreciated having to account to this committee the question they've always been probing, and I think it's kept us on our toes. And in response to your 2 points about consequence management, the point I do want to make, particularly since I'm also the CEO of an organization that also has gone down and trying to build up, it is very easy to destroy an organization administratively, and it takes a long time to fix that up. And we have finally managed to get competent people, and you can already begin to see from our side at the board level the quality of financial information improving, the quality of the reports improving, the action taken against people and things like that. So you will see when we are gone, the next report, you will see the kinds of consequence management, how we dealt with the issues and that kind of stuff. And thank you very much for keeping us on our toes in that respect.
Okay, thank you very much. Madam?
Just a comment, and I think it
relates to the fact that there's a new board in the pipeline. I think it would be very valuable for this board to provide a transition handover kind of document. Okay, that's fine. So long as that's covered, because I think it's critical going forward to the next election. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Thank you for the team, the leadership. We are very grateful, and that's always time and great presentation. We hope that you are going to be re-elected by intent. You remain a board for many years to come and work with us and ensure that we develop this country. Thank you very much. Let us colleagues pray for until 2. Break until 2, and then Professor Musoma and the team, they'll put their system in place, and then enjoy something to eat, and then you can take that.
What were you saying? I was just laughing at the work. At the flight to change. Okay. Oh, come on, for me to the continent.
Yeah.
Okay, you're pretty, hey.
You know CRL's favorite.
I know that.
Honorable Fisher thinks I'm running away from my job.
Okay, let me put that bookmark. I'm going to send that presentation to Xiaomi.
I'm going to go to the...
I know you're putting me to work. And your money, you say.
Oh.
yourself?
Well, the issue that we have, yeah. Issue that you. Issue you.
That's fine.
For my father, you have to put it in the other way. It's going to be the same. It's going to be the same.
I can see.